knowledge fight.
And Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan!
What?
Have you ever had something important stolen from you? Maybe not necessarily important, but...
I thought my car got stolen once, but it just got lost. Like, I had left it in front of somebody else's house.
Okay.
I was out partying.
Okay, well, yeah.
I was a much younger man, and I left my car in front of somebody's house.
Yeah.
Completely forgot that it was there, and then I woke up the next morning and thought it had been stolen. I wandered around like, oh, here it is. Okay. I don't know. I don't think I really had too much theft problems in my life.
Well, that's good.
Are you getting at something? Have you?
No, not at all.
Recently had?
No, I was just curious.
Okay.
The only thing I think the only thing I've ever had stolen from me for real was a Super Mario World cartridge that was stolen from me when I was in junior high.
Sure.
Other stuff has been stolen, but I haven't really cared about it.
I'm certain that I've had things like that happen over the course of my life, but like I've let that shit go.
Yeah, right?
I don't know
why I remember that one in specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a formative theftual experience for me.
No, I don't know. Not a big stealing things in my life.
I think we should all be grateful.
It's one of those things, man. Sometimes your questions lead to something fantastic, and sometimes they are dead ends.
It's not my fault.
And that is the nature of this show.
Indeed it is.
So, Jordan, this is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones and not much about the experience of being the victim of theft.
And I only know what you tell me about both.
That's correct. So, Jordan, today we've got an interesting episode to go over. We're back in the present day. It's been a while since we had to accommodate the move and what have you, but we are back, and we'll be going over July 26th through 29th. It is Friday through Monday.
Okay.
Of last week into this week. And, I would say that there's some interesting stuff in here and also a load of bullshit.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, before we get into that, I'd like to take a moment to say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show. We really appreciate it. So first, Kevin, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Kevin. Next, Mike, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Mike.
Next, Alex, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Alex.
Next, David, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, David.
Next, Donnie, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Donnie.
And then finally, I'd like to say thank you to a few people who have signed up and are supporting the show on an elevated level. We really appreciate it, but this sound effect is too long.
It's so long.
That we need to attempt this as a group. And if any of you who are being clustered into this group take offense at that, please feel free to shoot me an email and I will make it up to you with your own drop or something.
Or something.
I hope there is no offense taken by this, but we need to... pick up the pace. So, Philip, Lang, and Cornelia, thank you so much. You are all technocrats.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
We gotta go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare... Info war on you.
Thank you so much, Philip Lang and Cornelia.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you, Lang. And thank you, Cornelia.
You are all spectacular technocrats.
Absolutely.
If you'd like to sign up and support the show, if you appreciate what we do, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking that button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
It would be delightful.
So, Jordan, what we got here in front of us is a Friday episode where Alex is just, he's not there.
Yeah.
Owen Schroyer hosts the show. But Alex does call in, and he gives a little bit of content for us to get into. And it's really boring. It's stupid. But he does say one thing that I think is very interesting, and it's about his father's influence on him as a younger man.
Okay.
Because it's not just Alex Jones, and it's not just Lord Monckton that know that the French Revolution was the precursor of the communist, that the very same institutions and groups financed the takedown of Russia and China and are trying it now. People are taught this in college who were part of the establishment. And I've said this many times, and I'm not even trying to get my dad on the air, though. He's not an extrovert these days like he used to be. He's more of an introvert. But my dad told me all of this when I was a little kid. He gave me books about the French Revolution. He explained how the communists operate. And it's just all mainline history.
So these ideas that there is this grander conspiracy behind all of these world events, taking out the Tsar in Russia, the global communism, the French Revolution, all of this is being done by the same people, is the belief system espoused by the person we talked about on our last episode, David J. Smith.
Absolutely.
The Christian identity preacher who Alex learned a lot from.
As well as his dad.
Alex is now saying that this exact same sort of worldview was taught to him by his dad when he was younger. It's just mainstream history.
Yeah.
That's troubling to me.
Dad, can we have a catch? No! Let me teach you about communism.
Listen to this weirdo preacher from Waxahachie. It does lead me to believe that there may be a little bit more to that idea that maybe his dad was funneling some of these Christian identity beliefs to him at a young age.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a bigger part of the story than we realize.
They're running in crazy circles from the very beginning.
It's possible.
Yeah.
You're seeing little indications here and there that there might be some fertile soil there. So that's all for the the 26th. Because I'll insure yourselves.
Right.
So we jump to Sunday. And I wasn't expecting too much on Sunday because Alex generally phones a lot of those in. But I turned it in, and Alex is on some real crazy bullshit. Like, he is insanely revved up, ready to go, and he has got a narrative that he believes is going to be, like, game-changing.
All right.
And it's real stupid.
Here we go.
And, you know, I get, Mr. President, you're 73 and everything, and you don't know how the internet really works, but I'm going to explain something. In the last 3 days, more accounts have been lost on Facebook and Twitter of your bona fide supporters than you have on both of your Twitters, your Instagram, and everything else. 200 million followers on major accounts. Two of the accounts had 70 million together. 74 million together. One had 40-something million, one 30 million. The sites were getting hundreds of millions of views of your damn videos.
Jesus.
You don't think they put you unfiltered on CNN, MSNBC, ABC News, where they only have a million viewers maybe. These little meme channels were bigger than Fox News. But all the little fancy outfits and all the suits and all the consultants and that incestuous douchebag that is the Republican establishment. Excuse my French here.
Douchebag?
He lost track of that sentence.
Yeah.
He was really swinging for something, and he, like, his arm went out of socket.
Yeah.
He was like, fucking douchebag.
He was about to say they couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Like, I'm sure.
That was bananas.
He was in the neighborhood of that metaphor.
Yeah.
So this is part of Alex really talking directly to Trump through a lot of this.
Yeah, this is weird.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you can glean what's going on here.
I believe, Alex is still pissed off that he's not on Facebook.
That is ultimately what we're going to get back to.
Right.
Yes. Certainly,
so,
that's what's motivating a lot
so
of this.
So now he's trying to backdoor that. If Trump focuses on the millions of followers that he lost on those meme accounts,
mm-hmm.
then naturally that's going to trickle down to Alex being put back on Facebook, right?
I think you're probably right in terms of, like, motivation.
Yeah. Yes.
But so you didn't hear about this story of millions of people being kicked off Instagram?
Absolutely not. I don't give a fuck about Instagram.
Well, it's also not true.
Okay, so that sounds right.
Alex is really exaggerating this story here. He's trying to make it sound like 200 million people have been kicked off Instagram, presumably because they support Donald Trump.
And naturally.
These are your supporters.
200 million people support Donald Trump worldwide?
You have to pay close attention to the words he's using. He says that 200 million followers, which is different than 200 million people,
right,
were kicked off. It's, you know, that could just be one account that has 200 million people following it being shut down. Now,
right,
200 million follows have been lost.
Yeah.
What Alex is doing is trying to overinflate the scope of this purge from Instagram where some meme accounts got kicked off. If you want to call it a purge, I'm not entirely sure. To give you some perspective, if 200 million accounts were kicked off Instagram, that would represent twice the number of people who use Instagram in the United States being kicked off. That would be them removing approximately one-fifth of their entire subscriber base, which would completely cripple their business. It's the sort of claim that's just absurd on its face, and it's what Alex is trying to imply, and he should be embarrassed that he's trying to present the story this way.
Yeah, of course.
In reality, the number of followers of the affected accounts is probably lower than 200 million, and whatever number anyone can come up with doesn't take into account that there's probably heavy overlap in the followers of these meme accounts.
Of course.
So the number is exaggerated, overinflated anyway. So on Thursday and Friday of last week, approximately 30 meme accounts on Instagram were banned, with a spokesman for the company saying that they were, quote, disabled following multiple violations of our policies, including attempted abuse of our internal processes. At the point I'm preparing this episode and we're recording, it's not 100% clear exactly what the policy violations are, but given how shady large social media accounts tend to be, I'm willing to suspend judgment for the time being and wait and see what information comes out later before I take a really firm position on this.
Okay.
We've seen countless examples of people gaming social media systems for profit, from the people who set up syndicates to make tweets go viral for a fee, to the Krasenstein brothers, so it doesn't seem too unbelievable to assume that these accounts that got banned last week may have been up to some shit that Instagram wanted to shut down for non-political reasons at all.
Yeah, they're just abusing the system like a bunch of assholes.
Right.
Yeah.
For some context, in situations like this, it's best to find examples of times that things like this have happened before and why they've happened before. And in this case, it's super easy.
In late French Revolution.
Exactly.
Yes, there we go.
In late December 2018, Instagram had another purge of accounts that violated their policies. In that instance, a spokesman for Instagram told the Daily Dot, quote, "We've seen behavior on Instagram whereby some usernames, for example, usernames which contain a single word, letter, or number, are stolen or traded. This behavior violates our policies in a number of ways. We don't allow people to buy, sell, or trade aspects of their account, including usernames. We're consistently taking steps to disincentivize and stop this behavior, including removing accounts that violate our policies." This is part of an ongoing process. Like, social media companies create new rules to cut down on scamming. Then the scammers find new ways around that rule and the process just starts over.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time.
Exactly. Instagram's been working on this since at least 2014 when they banned millions of entirely fake accounts. When I see something like what happened last week, it's pretty easy for me to see this as probably just another step in the process of fine-tuning their way, like making it so you can't exploit people.
Yeah, because I did see that the Krasenstein brothers had been absolutely selling.
From everything I can tell, yeah.
Yeah. And they were like, no, we totally weren't. And then there's shit tons of screenshots of them doing exactly that.
It appears that that is definitely what they were up to.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens with this Instagram thing. Like, I see every reason to suspend judgment and see, like, oh, these accounts very well may have been breaking their rules.
Yeah.
And I also looked over the screen names for all the ones that were banned, and, like, obviously I'm not some fucking meme guy out there cruising Instagram for all this, the freshest memes.
You are not doing it for the gram, that is true.
But I looked through all the account names and none of them were like MAGA 2020 or none of them had associations with Trump or nationalism.
I love Trump 69.
No, I don't know. I don't know that these were actually even accounts that were making Trump memes. Some of them very well may have been,
sure.
But like, it wasn't like Count Dankula was in the mix or something. Anyway, also, if Alex Jones cared at all about social media purges and shadow bans and all that shit that he talks about all the time, if he weren't just trying to bring up these topics for completely self-serving positions and his wounded narcissism, by now I would have imagined that he would bring up how sex workers are being pushed off social media spaces at least once in the time that I've listened to him, and I've never heard him bring that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you really would think that.
Yeah.
Because it does seem like he would have to be, he would be okay with that.
He's a libertarian.
Yeah, right? Shouldn't he be like, sex workers should absolutely have.
He's a fucking libertarian.
Well, yeah.
So the reason Alex is freaking out so much about this and exaggerating it to such an extreme level is twofold. The first is what you pointed out already. He wants to get back on social media.
Of course.
It's exhausting for him to have to try and keep doing these like public stunts in order to keep his name in the public's eye. But if he doesn't do that, his audience is going to slowly dwindle and he's going to go out of business. Second, Alex is keenly aware that these syndicates of interconnected meme distributors who are able to create artificial virality are really the best option left for disseminating propaganda on social media. If social media companies are starting to address that problem on their platform, he knows that his ideas are going to have to compete on a level playing ground with other people, and they're going to fail miserably.
Yeah, that's not good. If you can't win, cheat.
So this is one of Alex's gigantic narratives, and he is freaking out about it. These meme accounts that got banned. He's trying to, I have to be super clear about this. He's trying to imply, and will directly say, that it's 200 million people got kicked off Instagram,
okay.
Which is complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah, that's insane.
The only way to justify using that number in any way is to say that the small number of accounts that got kicked off
had a
large followings.
Following
who are still on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's completely insane.
That's like when he said that he had 3 billion listeners worldwide, and you're like, really?
In the aggregate.
Really, 40% of the world listens to your show.
Right, including babies.
Yeah, well, of course.
So in this next clip, he gets to another terrifying reality that we are facing. With Instagram cracking down on these dank meme promoters.
You just love saying dank meme, don't you?
I don't know. I feel weird saying it. I feel like I'm really out of my lane.
You feel so, it's weird. Every time I say it, I feel so fucking old.
I feel exactly the same way I would feel if I tried to wear a hat backwards. Just like, don't do it.
No, that would not work well with you.
No. So there's a war on memes, Jordan. This Instagram thing is a part of it, and then there's more.
Okay.
And they've almost passed a bill in the House of Representatives right now, bipartisan, to give people $30,000 fines for memes. I'm not joking.
Which ones?
Dang. Go straight to jail. Ladies and gentlemen, that's where this country has gone. $15,000 to $30,000 fines. That's the same thing they passed in Europe last year. My listeners thought I was making it up and didn't think it was real. It's the law in Europe.
I kind of like that vocal flourish there.
Europe.
So in this narrative, Alex is misrepresenting the Copyright Alternative and Small Claims Enforcement Act of 2019, or the CASE Act. The act is designed to make it easier for holders of copyrights to protect their copyrighted protected work without having to subject themselves to lengthy and expensive court proceedings. It would mostly involve creating small claims court mechanisms to simplify the process and expedite it and make it so you don't have to exert tons of money in order to protect your material.
Right.
Because that does disincentivize people from protecting what is theirs.
Yeah,
what they
absolutely
have intellectual rights to.
If it costs you more to fight against it than it would be to just ignore it, then why the hell would you fight against it?
Right, when you have every reason to fight.
Exactly.
Ultimately, this legislation is not just a way to outlaw memes. Although memes could definitely be seriously affected. But here's the thing. What people are doing with memes, in many cases, is already illegal. When it involves clearly copyrighted material, it's technically illegal.
Well, yeah.
People are allowed to get away with it because most of the time the copyright holders know it's more hassle than it's worth to go after someone who's illegally breaching their copyright. The CASE Act doesn't make anything illegal that was previously legal. It really is just about making it easier for people to protect their own intellectual property. And for Alex, someone who's super into property rights, it doesn't make sense for him to be opposed to people being able to defend their property. Obviously,
unless you're...
Well, hold on. Obviously, this kind of legislation could have a huge impact on memes, but I find it very difficult to imagine that even if the CASE Act does succeed in going through, they would have much of an effect on how individual users of social media platforms used memes. I think it would just make it easier to sue people with large platforms who profit off using copyrighted material and defend themselves by saying, it's just a meme.
I can't think of anyone who might... that might apply to.
It's hard to hear Alex misrepresenting a story and not think about how he just had to pay Matt Fury, the creator of Pepe the Frog, $15,000 for using his copyrighted material in a poster that InfoWars sold on their website.
Seems odd.
The CASE Act, had it been in place, would have been a big problem for Alex's legal strategy in that case. Immediately after Fury and Alex reached their settlement, Alex had his lawyer Robert Barnes on his show to discuss the case. Their angle on it was crystal clear, and it was basically boiled down to, if you want to spend a ton of money suing Alex and then win $15,000, go ahead.
Yeah.
They weren't defending their innocence, or saying that they were right. They were clearly signaling that their legal strategy was to create circumstances where it is way too costly for anyone to fight Alex in court, so they give up, or they don't even bring the suit in the first place. That's one of the ways Alex protects himself.
Yeah, it's very similar to what debt collectors, like there are so many people who will buy debt from credit card companies and then they'll take you to court.
Right.
But you know, most of them never show up. All that happens is they wind up losing their case because they didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And if you show up, you'd find out that
I've had a number of friends beat traffic tickets that way.
Exactly.
Just by showing up,
just
you automatically.
Show up.
It doesn't always work, obviously.
No.
But in a number of instances, it's like, it's not worth it to pay the cop to go to court.
Exactly.
And you just end up, it gets thrown out.
For sure.
If the CASE Act goes through, Alex is far more vulnerable on matters of copyright. I can't say for sure it would lead to any actual suits being filed, but the number of potential suits have to be something that really fucking worries him. I suspect that this is what's motivating him to misrepresent this story as if it's the end of the world. Also, to his point that the CASE Act is being discussed now because it's like, he's presenting it as like, the globalists are making their move, and it's a way to take out Trump to take over the internet.
Sure.
This exact same act was introduced in October 2017.
I doubt it.
So I kind of also find it funny that Alex brings up how this is the same as what was passed in Europe last year, partially because it was passed in March 2019, and because the EU rules, that's not last year, also because the EU rules that were passed are a completely different thing than what Alex is talking about or even what the CASE Act is.
Sure.
He's trying to present the idea that in Europe, if you post a meme, you're getting a fine, and that's absurd. For one, again, this is a rule that the EU passed to aid in copyright enforcement in the new age of technology. Second, I'm going to read to you about this rule from an article in Wired. Quote, the most controversial part of the copyright directive makes platforms like Google and Facebook responsible for copyright violations and material posted by their users. Previously, users, not the platform, were liable. People posting memes wouldn't be fined. The platform would. Maybe. It might not even come down to that.
Yeah.
But it creates an incentive for Facebook and Google to protect the copyrighted material that's being misused by their users as opposed to all the consequences falling on the individual user.
Right. They need to become their own cops instead of
or at least need to do some part.
Yeah, exactly.
It.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they're complicit in the misuse of this intellectual property. And also, don't worry, that EU rule didn't infringe on member states' sovereignty. Each state was specifically left to their own devices to write their own laws and come up with how they would implement practices to protect copyrights through Europe. Nothing that Alex says in this at all is real. It's all just blustery bullshit.
Okay.
He's hoping he'll add up to enough incitement to get Trump to somehow force Facebook or Twitter to let him back on the platform.
He is basically...
Because you can hear that he's directing this to Trump.
Oh, of course.
It's so much like, sir...
Please put me back on Facebook.
There's so much of that.
Yeah.
You can just feel it.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably in some way motivated by like the longer things go on, the worse his situation is.
Does he really think that Trump could even do that? Like Trump doesn't have the capability to do that. That's simply not a thing that he can do as an executive.
I mean, it would be an interesting thing to consider how he might.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could probably, like, take away tax relief from these companies if they didn't allow Alex back on.
Like, some sort of pressure on the companies to allow Alex back on as opposed to...
Which would be really fucked up.
Like, he can't write an executive order that's just like, Alex Jones gets back on Facebook.
I mean, he could. I don't know how enforceable it would be. That'd be really weird.
That would be really weird.
But this boils down to something that I think is like a real trend of Alex's that we've talked about a bit, but it bears mentioning over and over again.
He wants a king.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. All of his ideas are so anti-king and anti-monarchist and what have you, but he believes that individuals are able to do everything.
Yeah.
He thinks that everyone is omnipotent on some level.
Right.
And it leads him down really fucked up. But like roads, like Trump needs to fix the internet. Like,
yeah.
What is he gonna fucking do?
He's gonna buckle down.
Right.
He's gonna pull himself up by his bootstraps, just like he did a long time ago when his dad gave him a million dollar loan.
Mr. President.
Yep.
Get me back on Twitter. Tear down this wall between me and Twitter. So in this next clip, Alex breaks down that if Trump goes down,
we all go down.
And Trump is going to go down if he doesn't deal with these meme accounts being kicked off.
Okay.
Next hour, though, I'm tearing into POTUS.
Do it.
Because let me tell you, if he goes down, I'm going to have to leave the country because they are coming after me. They're coming after you.
Would you say
these globalists are crooks? And I've been watching Trump closely, and I've been talking to his advisors. And finally, some of my people have gotten meetings with his head campaign guy in Florida. And they're finally getting it some, but not quick enough. We need dramatic action.
So you got to get those meme accounts back on, because the memes are so important. They're how we communicate. So look, I think Alex is making his panic a little too clear here. I think that Alex knows that he's gotten himself into a no-win situation, largely because connecting himself so closely to Trump and his policies, like, by doing that, Alex has radicalized himself past the point of no return, and his audience has gone down the same road with him. Like, what does he do if Trump loses in 2020? Legitimately, what can he do? He's made the argument that this guy becoming president is America's last shot against the globalists who want to destroy America and kill your families. What's he going to do? Is he going to tell his audience to gear up for the 2020 midterms? And try and start a big impeachment campaign when the system is already, by definition, controlled by the globalists? His audience is so far past that shit. And like with Alex's bullshit that he's spread about demons and child sacrifice being so defining of these enemies, if Alex tried to pivot back to being an opposition voice to the party in power by advocating for anything short of armed insurrection, his audience would abandon him so fast his bank account would spin.
Yeah, absolutely.
His empty-ass bank account would spin.
Which further cements my position that Trump will not leave office.
Simultaneously, Alex is in a huge problem if Trump wins, and Alex's personal situation doesn't improve. How long can Alex argue that Trump is in a death battle with the very same globalist enemies that Alex is against without Trump doing anything at all to help Alex? If they were actually allies in anything more than lip service level bullshit, you'd think that Trump would want to protect and support his most public supporter and the only voice in the media who really gets it. The more and more Alex has to pay the consequences for his actions, and the longer it goes where Trump doesn't seem to give a fuck about Alex, the harder it is for Alex to create the impression that he's anything other than a useful idiot for an aspiring authoritarian who he'd hoped would help him advance his own personal interests, and it has not gone that way.
Yeah, it seems like Alex is going to have to fall on his sword and play the martyr. It doesn't seem like there's
any
other...
It's almost inevitable.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly think that Alex kind of realizes that he's painted himself into a bad corner, but unless something very specific happens, his days are numbered. Not in the sense that his life is in danger or anything like that, but that what he does doesn't serve any purpose anymore. Because he's become so entwined with Trump, as things escalate in our country, he has to escalate along with it and be party to that escalation. He can't recede. He can't give an inch, because the audience he's cultivated in the last few years won't allow it. If Alex gives an inch, it's not him just trying to moderate and be less extreme or be reasonable. It's ceding ground to literal demons and child murderers. And that's a bad position to be in. any negotiation, any compromise is compromise with the devil.
Yep.
You can't compromise with the devil.
You can have sympathy for him, though.
Only in a song.
Okay.
The only two positive outcomes for Alex right now are for Trump to become an authoritarian ruler, rounding up his enemies with the army, imposing restrictions on businesses he doesn't like, and ruthlessly suppressing the press, or Trump loses and there's a civil war. Peace in any form is not a marketable option for Alex anymore. He is too far gone.
Yeah, there was a time where, like, last year when we were talking about, like, what is it going to do? What is it going to take for him to pivot away from Trump? And how could he, how could he dismount? Those days are gone.
I think he understands that in order to retain the audience that he has and the revenue stream that has become, so crucial.
Yeah.
He can't.
No, he can't.
I think it's possible that he could, but it would be one of the hardest maneuvers ever. And it would require, it would require going to such an extreme level. Like, you would have to advocate bombing buildings. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he would have to turn on the government in such a hard way.
No, he'd have to become the IRA, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Trump would be the target of it.
Right.
Like, Trump would have to do something that was, like, or at least Alex would have to create a narrative where Trump had done something so extreme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Trump doesn't have to do something.
Right.
Yeah.
Alex would have to spin the narrative that Trump has abandoned us and all our globalists, and the logical conclusion that his audience would accept would be he'd have to be advocating for violence.
Right.
And that would be the civil war option that I'm talking about in terms of him being able to retain his place in the market. Other than that, he's useless.
Yeah.
Like, Trump would rather have QAnon people around than him.
Of course.
Like, he had Lionel come to the fucking White House.
Yeah.
He pointed at the Q baby.
As long as he's got Fox and Friends, he'll be fine.
Trump keeps retweeting Q accounts. Like,
really?
QAnon people accounts.
I refuse to pay attention to any of Trump's tweets. I refuse on principle.
He's given way more public,
absolutely,
appreciation to that than Alex.
Ugh.
And Alex has to know that, and the optics of it are terrible. Like, I hear clips like that last one where Alex is talking about, like, if Trump doesn't win, I gotta leave the country and shit.
Sure, sure.
And I can't help but think about how much better Alex's life would have been if he didn't sign up with Trump. Like, he could have maintained his imagined position as the guy who's above partisan politics, and honestly, like, I think about this, like, someone with his talents offering a criticism of Trump from the right would probably be a very marketable thing in this environment.
Yeah, in 2019 it would be.
Even in 2016, 2017, 2018, like, all along the way, someone with the gifts that Alex has, just in terms of pure talent, you would ignore a whole lot of the other terrible things about him if he was offering a right-wing critique. Like, he would have done a much better job trying to push his shit into the mainstream than Glenn Beck did. Like, look what Glenn Beck tried to pull off.
Yeah, that was
sad. It was embarrassing, but it worked.
It did.
Like, a lot of people really tried to help rehab his image.
You're right.
Alex could have done something like that, and he's so much better at being a liar than Glenn Beck is.
Yeah.
He's not nearly, I mean, he's embarrassing, but he's not, like, just on a pure competence level, he's better than Glenn Beck. And I think he could have made so much money in that space. Like, he could have gotten left people over to his side again. He could have done, like, all that shit that he was doing during the Ron Paul times.
Like, you know, I think maybe he could have. But my guess is he did not want to find out. He doesn't want to find out if his audience loves him more than Trump or Trump more than him. That's a dangerous
But if he had
fight,
never
you know?
Gotten on board with him and been against him, it would have been perfect for him because he could have retained the audience that he had and built in a different direction that was much more on brand with him.
Yeah.
The counter to the power, like, it would have been, like, so reinforcing of everything. Like, you'd have, like, oh yeah, he appears to not be a globalist, but he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would have worked.
Especially when he put his hands on the orb and he said he
was
a
globalist.
Yeah, you would have been able to fucking murder him.
There were so many news stories that have come out, and every single thing that falls in line with all of Alex's old narratives about Rex 84 and Posse Comitatus, he could have made so much money off that.
Yeah.
He could have been just banking. Yeah, I think about it, and, you know, like, it sucks. It sucks that he's so awful now. You know, like, he's a really awful pile of shit. But you could take some comfort in knowing that he's only such an awful pile of shit right now because he's dealing with the worst decision he's ever made, and he's spiraling the drain.
Yeah.
So there's some cold comfort in that, like that he could have gone flown under the radar with all of this awful white nationalist, white identity bullshit. Like he could have very easily Trojan horsed himself closer to the mainstream. If he hadn't made this decision.
Right.
So, you but know, it is, it's sour grapes.
But. It is the truth that racism is bad for you as well. You know,
true.
Like the people who voted for Trump solely white power people who voted for Trump, which is most of them, they're the ones who are also being fucked over by Trump's policies. Like,
sure.
they're not getting any, increase in tax.
No.
You know, they're and fucked over too.
And take policies even out of it. They're not happier.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Just internally, they're not happier. They're
just
miserable.
More filled with rage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of rage, former Rage Against the Machine member.
Tom Morello?
No.
Oh.
I was going to try and pretend that this next guy is someone who he's not.
Oh.
Alex is mad at Donnie Deutsch.
sure. Fine.
Former Rage Against the Machine member Donnie Deutsch.
Fine.
I don't care about Donnie Deutsch.
Nope.
I don't care about Alex being mad at him.
Nope.
Enjoy, guys. The only reason I left this clip in is because Alex is mad at Donnie Deutsch, and the way he describes Mr. Deutsch is... It just seems like Alex is talking about himself.
Okay.
And I love Donnie Deutsch or whatever his stupid name is. I mean,
double D's.
What a punk, man. Trump will never be elected. Trump will be out in 6 months. All of it alone. These people, by the way, have almost no ratings. Their average show has 200,000 viewers.
Oh, no.
Before they shadow banned me off Facebook and Twitter, my average live video had 2 million views. Hillary lost, they shadow banned me. Average video had 100,000 views. Then they totally banned me. Because you can't compete, you schmucks. No one wants to watch you, Donnie Douche. No one wants
nice.
To hear you. Everyone hates you except the few mental patients that watch your show or people tuning in to get the talking points to go out and lie.
That part at the end there is just such a crystallization of Alex's shit.
Absolutely.
No one wants to listen to your dumb show
nope.
except some fucking brainwashed weirdos who believe your stupid bullshit.
Yep.
And people who tune in order to help argue, get talking points to argue with people online.
Yep.
That is such a, like, and I think that Alex is probably less useful of that second category these days.
Yeah.
But he definitely, like, he knows that that's what his show is used for
yeah.
a long time.
And we've listened to calls that were specifically, hey, Alex, my family says this.
Right.
What should I say back to them?
Tell them they're globalists.
Exactly.
So, Alex gets back now to the Instagram narrative. And I think this clip is important because he's really saying that 200 million people got kicked off Instagram.
They've been cheating all along, and now Google and all of them are 200 million accounts on Facebook and Instagram that supported the president, all annihilated. 200 million. I went and counted them up.
He went and counted them up.
He went and counted them up, what, by like one,
do you want to know how
two,
he did it?
Because
he actually does,
three,
he does explain how he
no,
did it.
Tell me.
200 million. I went and counted them up. It was reported on Friday. It was like 120 million. It's 200 million today. As of 3 hours ago, I spent 30 minutes going through and checking all these accounts and looking and adding the numbers up on a calculator, on a big old fat business calculator. And I've shot an emergency report to the president.
Oh.
So
oh
Alex broke out his accounting calculator.
He's got a calculator.
Tap, 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 tap,
doesn't
tap, tap.
Oh, it has to have the
oh,
roll
yeah.
of paper. It
oh,
has
yeah,
to have
absolutely,
the roll of paper.
Yeah.
Please.
The mind reels. Like, I just picture a desk with a
yeah.
little lamp on it.
Yeah.
Alex has got
oh,
a visor
absolutely.
On. He's
yep.
like, tip, 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 yep. tip, tip, tip. Oh, my God, 200 million. Oh. I've got to tell the president.
And he's got a crank, too. He's got the crank, clink.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I want to watch that.
He's just panicking. He's like, I must tell the White House.
He should put that. I would give anything to have that video put out. That would go
amazing.
Viral.
So he's just making that up. That's just a lie. The 200 million accounts are gone.
And it would take more than a half hour to even.
Yeah. This is just, he knows that what calculators do, I guess. And he's embellishing what he did with one. So Alex gets on to another narrative that I think is actually super interesting. And here we go.
Without even looking, I've got stacks of articles here.
Stacks on stacks.
Important to point out that he's not looking.
We're in California and Illinois and Maryland and everywhere the Democrats are in control, people are losing their student loan financial aid because the unions and the lawyers are stealing all of it, just like Detroit fell, the most prosperous area of our country, now the poorest. 80,000 California students lose financial aid thanks to teachers union. I don't need that clip anymore, guys. I don't need that clip anymore. Can we just have a Dr. McCamp shot? Thanks. So again, 80,000 California students lose financial aid thanks to teachers union state government. Think about that.
Okay. Doesn't sound true.
And that's just one in my stack today. What you get under their control is collapse of civilization.
You can tell, by the way, he's like really taking long pauses.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know this
story. I don't understand.
I don't know what's happening.
Yep.
I see a headline. I think I can roll with it. State government, teachers
unions.
There
we go. Teachers union, that's
bad. Fuck them.
Yeah.
So according to Alex, 80,000 students lost their financial aid. Important. They lost it.
That doesn't sound
true. In California. And it's all the fault of these meddling teachers unions. These damn liberals and unions, they're out to crush everyone and get students kicked out of California universities.
It really doesn't sound like them.
Honestly, I have no idea why Alex would even care about a story like this, even if it were true. He thinks colleges, especially ones in blue states, are just liberal brainwashing centers. So I figure he'd think it was great that people are losing their ability to go to them. I think, shouldn't that be a net positive for him?
Yeah, shouldn't he be happy about that? Yeah,
I guess the lesson here is to never underestimate how much he and his intellectual ancestors hate the idea of workers being able to have any control over their destiny and how they'll take any opportunity possible to malign labor.
Well, that's what his dad told him right out the womb. He was like, communism is exactly what unions are. So right. from his first breath.
Mm-hmm. Fuck labor.
Yeah.
He was yelling that while his wife was in labor.
Oh, damn it. You were too quick.
Yeah. So here's the first of the myriad problems of the story that Alex is telling. This has nothing to do with California being a blue state. It was the result of a federal rule from the Department of Education.
The one run by fucking Betsy goddamn Devin.
Well, it's actually, you know, the regulation in question was made at the end of Obama's term. So it's not 100%
okay, cool.
Betsy's fault here.
She didn't make it better.
No.
Yeah.
The regulation had to do with states being required to have a system in place for in-state residents who take classes remotely from out-of-state institutions, with the rule including that if there weren't a process in place for dealing with these students' concerns, then recipients of federal student aid, like Pell Grants, would lose access to said aid. It was a measure to protect students, and although it's a little bit complicated, there are absolutely consumer protection-related issues and reasons for a rule like this to be in place. Naturally, since Trump and his administration hate anything Obama did, they fought the implementation of this rule. It didn't go into effect until July 1st, 2018, and even then, Trump's people were trying to delay having to enforce it.
Yeah, they were sued enforce it. Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Just this April, a judge ruled that they couldn't postpone enforcing the rule any longer. So they started accepting that this rule was an actual rule on July 22nd, 2019. That was like a week ago.
That was a week ago, yeah.
That judge also ruled that Education Secretary Betsy DeVos had illegally delayed the rule's implementation. Alex is blaming unions for this because the National Education Association and the California Teachers Associations are the ones who sued Betsy DeVos to get the rule implemented.
Absolutely.
California is the state that's most affected by this very immediate shift in the rule being real because they're the only state that's not part of the National Council for State Authorization Reciprocity Agreements called SARA, which basically is just a series of agreements that the states recognize each other's protections for students. California doesn't belong to that because they feel that the body does not offer strong enough consumer protections for the students. Now, they probably should have had something in place to deal with the rule long before DeVos's lawsuit came to an end. But I think that if you just look at what's going on in the world, they had every reason to think that this rule would never be implemented. And until it was, they weren't out of compliance with the rule. And they had some systems in place just that weren't up to that rule.
Right. Gotcha.
Now, the bigger issue is that as soon as California learned that the rule was in place and that it was enforceable, the California Department of Consumer Affairs immediately created a complaint system for students. So they met all the requirements of the regulation. And just like that, all of the students who were at risk of losing their financial aid were no longer at risk of losing their financial aid. By the time Alex got on air on July 28th, this problem was already resolved. He's misrepresenting the story that the students lost their financial aid when they were only at risk of losing it if California wasn't in compliance with a federal regulation. He's lying about the union involvement in the situation and completely whitewashing Betsy DeVos's role. Put simply, Alex is a liar and a really lazy dude who's on air misrepresenting news that's already outdated just to make it look like unions are bad and blue states are evil. Quite frankly, he's a loser.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, it's real serious bullshit.
I really, really, really hate Betsy DeVos.
Like he fucking cares about these students.
Of course. Of
getting
course
financial aid
care.
To go
yeah,
to college.
No shit.
What the fuck is he even trying to pretend?
Right.
Yeah, and Betsy DeVos could go fly a kite, too, with her involvement in student aid issues.
Yeah, no shit.
The loan program.
How
and shit.
It bothers me that they received no fuck. She was found to be illegally doing something, and they're like...
Yeah.
And also you will receive zero consequences other than you successfully delayed this rule for two fucking years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everybody had every reason to assume that they were going to create more legal hurdles or just make it so like, okay, the court said that the rule is in place, but it's not.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a chaotic environment that Trump and his administration are creating around these types of issues. So to then turn around and blame somebody for not following the rule that the federal government is, it's a federal rule and they're saying this rule's bullshit, we're yeah. not gonna do it. I know that you should follow rules.
Yeah.
But you're also creating an environment where no one knows what rules are real and no one knows what rules to follow.
And even if they are real.
It's chaos.
Absolutely. And it's by design, like, because it's the same thing as what we were talking about earlier with, it's just too much trouble to sue somebody for
right.
not enough gain, where it's like, if Trump just stops following all of these rules, nobody knows which ones to put their energy into making him follow,
right.
you
right.
know? So you can sue him on every possible rule, but...
Random enforcement is a hallmark of sort of autocratic leaders.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because then you create the environment where you could be punished for anything or nothing, and...
And targeted enforcement is very, very
yes.
important.
So over at the end of last week into the weekend, there was a little bit of a dust up between one Donald Trump and Elijah Cummings.
No.
If you'll recall.
I did not hear anything about that.
So Cummings made some comments to the ICE director about the situation in the camps.
Right, right, right.
Where immigrants and refugees
right.
are being held. And Trump didn't take kindly to this and called Baltimore pile of shit.
Yep, yep.
More or less.
Infested, yeah.
Rat-infested yep. Mess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people didn't appreciate that so much because of the very clearly racist coded language.
Oh, yeah.
That was used. And, yeah, I see what they're saying.
You know what?
I get it. I think they make a decent point.
It is nice now knowing that we can completely disregard anything that anybody in the GOP says. You're all racist.
Well,
done.
At least
if you vote for Trump, you're a racist.
At least you prioritize things that, or you disprioritize standing up against racist things. Like at very least, your priorities are such that something else takes higher priority than dignity.
I say it's a tacit admission of racism.
I think we're saying the same things, just slightly
pretty
differently.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So Alex responds to this by appealing to that video that we discussed on a recent episode where he created a completely artificial appearance of these camps
yeah.
by combining Candace Owens' video from a year ago.
Nazi propaganda.
Right. Yeah. And this DHHS center that was specifically created to keep kids out
in
of
yeah.
ICE and yeah. Border Patrol.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Alex created that video to create a false presentation and appearance of what these ICE camps and centers were like. So he uses that to be like, this is what Elijah Cummings is talking about.
Sure.
So then he gets past that hurdle.
Right.
Then he has to deal with the fact that Trump said this clearly racist coded language
yeah.
To attack Elijah Cummings. And instead of really addressing that, what he decides to do is make fun of Victor Blackwell, the CNN anchor who broke down
right.
and was on the verge of tears while discussing how he experienced right. Trump tweeting about Elijah Cummings this way.
Yeah.
So
an echo of election night, mocking people who are.
Alex likes to mock minorities who are crying.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty big piece of his show.
Yeah.
So what he does, I'm going to play these clips, and they're a little bit tough just in terms of the lack of humanity that Alex is showing. But I wanted to really drive home the point that Alex is really making a meal out of making fun of this anchor having an emotional reaction to Trump using dehumanizing language consistently towards non-white people.
Cummings, did you hear he called black people rats? And CNN goes, yeah, Trump called blacks rats. Are you insulted whether you're white or black or whatever the hell color you are that they lie to us like this? That this is what they do? And aren't you sick of it? But it gets worse. CNN anchor Victor Blackwell chokes up on air after Trump rips infested Baltimore. Yeah, I call black people rats.
So you see already what he's doing is he's created the false appearance of the conversation that's being had.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea that everyone is saying that Trump called black people rats is not what people are responding to.
Right.
So he's already shifted the goalposts, created a straw man for himself to talk about.
Right.
So now here is some more of this. This is pretty disgraceful shit.
Here's the crying CNN reporter.
There's a revolution going on in California. So many sanctuary areas want out of this ridiculous crime-infested and breeding concept. Infested, he says.
So real quick, before we get to Alex's response, I think it's really important to point out that the part of Victor Blackwell's piece that people were posting and, you know, got pretty popular online was, I saw it all over the place. The important context that Alex is cutting out of the beginning of this clip is he's explaining that it hurts to hear the president of the United States use consistently dehumanizing language about non-white people.
Yeah.
He points out in this segment that Alex, I don't know how he decided to, where to cut this.
Oh yeah.
But he includes a discussion of that in all of Trump's 43,000 tweets, he only uses the word infested to describe a place that's predominantly non-white and to attack non-white legislators that he is beefing with. And that there are instances of white legislators that he has gotten into fights with, and he doesn't use that same sort of language when he does. So that is the conversation, and that is what Victor Blackwell's piece is about. Alex deprives it of that context in order to make fun of just the fact that Blackwell gets emotional, which is really gross.
The president says about Congressman Cummings' district.
This is the worst acting I've ever seen.
Should watch your show.
Nice. That no human
get him.
Would want to live there. You know who did, Mr. President? I did. From the day I was brought home from the hospital.
Hit pause and back it up. I'm going to start from the beginning. This is mind control, folks. Trump's trying to say clean it up, help people. No human should have to live there. It's not good conditions. The same stuff Cummings says about the Border Patrol that isn't true. You're treating these kids like animals. No human should put up with this. And Trump's like, no human should put up with what you're doing to your own people. And what you allow, the city doesn't even spend the money they steal to clean up garbage in the street. And the police won't do their job because they're leftist. And they're so afraid they'll get fired, so they let gangbangers kill people and attack the police.
What?
And then you cry about how Trump's trying to hurt you. Because you prey on those people. Anchor Victor Blackwell.
So there's obviously there are endemic problems and systematic problems in a city like Baltimore. And there are, you know, it's far more complicated than I would be able to explain to anybody.
Yeah.
I think,
can't just watch The Wire.
Right.
It's not enough just to watch.
There's oversimplification that Alex is doing here that is disgusting.
Absolutely.
It's very shitty. But
abhorrent.
But it's another expression of what we talked about earlier, this idea that Alex thinks that one person can do anything. So Elijah Cummings is here, and he represents this area.
Yeah.
Therefore, he can fix it. And if he doesn't fix it, he must be profiting off not fixing it,
yeah.
Or he must want it to be this way,
yeah.
Which isn't necessarily good thinking.
No, it's absolutely impossible for these people to understand the interconnectedness of problems.
Yeah.
And the way that if you pull one lever here, it will change something oftentimes unexpected.
Sure.
You know?
Now, is there corruption involved that probably could be addressed?
Of course.
Probably.
We live in Chicago.
Right. Almost certainly. Are there better strategies that maybe should be explored? Possibly.
Absolutely.
Entirely possible. People who care are discussing those things.
Yeah, yeah.
Alex and Trump are not. So in this next, we get back here to Alex making fun of Victor Blackwell, because he goes on for quite a while doing this. It's pretty gross.
From the day I was brought home from the hospital to the day I left for college.
Poor baby.
A lot of people I care about still do. There are challenges, no doubt.
Well, go help them then.
But people are proud of their community.
Hit pause. I want to hear what this jackass has done and who lives there. And I want to hear what you gave and what you, like Obama. Woman's like, we live in a car. We'd like a house. You got a car, lady. No Democrat got her house. Republicans did.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
He's rambling quite a bit. But Alex, what do you know about what Victor Blackwell's done? What do you know about his personal life? What do you know about his giving? What do you know? Do you know anything?
No, absolutely.
He doesn't know shit. He's just assuming.
Right.
That's just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe this other than knee-jerk white supremacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you gave him examples of, oh, look, Blackwell did this for his community. Oh, look, Blackwell, he'd say, well, that's not enough, or that's nothing,
right.
Or you're full of shit, or
yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. There's no...
It's a losing game to even explore.
Absolutely.
It's just worthwhile pointing out that Alex assumes that it's nothing.
Yeah.
So,
I hate him so much.
Here's the last clip of this.
Here, let's finish up with this turd basket.
I'm proud of their community.
Turd basket?
I don't want to sound self-righteous. But people get up and go to work there. They care for their families there. They love their children who pledge allegiance to the flag, just like people who live in districts of congressmen who support you, sir.
That is the fakest crap I've ever seen. So this guy is crapping all over the truth.
So when we see stuff like this, this behavior is indicative of things that are threatening to Alex.
Yeah.
The mocking of it, the constant repetition, going back and like doing the fake crying over it, and this is brainwashing. It's that is the behavior that Alex employs towards things that are pretty prevalent. Like, there's no denying that this clip went all over the place. People are reposting it.
Yeah.
It's something that you would assume that his audience would have access to, or they might come in contact with. And it's making an argument that is threatening to Alex.
Yeah.
Because it does point out, I mean, Alex doesn't play the part that says this,
no.
But it does discuss, Victor Blackwell does clearly discuss the idea that Trump uses these sorts of language and these linguistic terms specifically in situations when he's attacking non-white people. And it is hard to hear. It's something that it has an effect on people.
Yeah.
And if that were allowed to be seen as a legitimate perspective that someone has, it runs the risk of opening up his audience's eyes to an empathic position and understanding how other people feel.
Right.
And that is dangerous to Alex.
Right.
So he must mock it.
Right, 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 right.
That's
even though a large number of his audience would actually be like, yeah, I love that he says all of that shit. Yeah. Yeah.
And
Baltimore is infested with,
There's a crucial distinction in, like, later on one of these other episodes, I believe on the Monday episode, he plays a clip of Marianne Williamson hosting an apology, session where, white people apologize to black people. And he doesn't need to mock that.
Yeah.
Because he has created an environment where that looks like an absurd spectacle.
Yeah.
So he can just play that and not interrupt it.
Yeah.
So there's very different ways that Alex uses other media. And it's important to understand that this strategy is employed when something is a threat to him.
Yeah.
I believe that is definitely the case. So, Alex earlier said that he was going to take Trump to the woodshed because of this, meme shit.
Sure. Sure. Okay. All right. Here we go.
He doesn't.
Taking him to the woodshed.
So what he does is he has a pre-recorded, message to the president where he says that Trump, you're committing suicide if you don't help your boy out.
Wrestling shoot. Gotcha.
Yes, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would describe this as very embarrassing. Like the idea that he thinks he's talking directly to the president. Crazy. Second, if he thinks he's talking to the president, he has to think that the president is as stupid as one of his listeners, which may or may not be true.
It's absolutely true.
But no matter what, this is just an exercise in embarrassment.
The Democrats admit, the EU admits, the big tech giants admit that memes are more powerful than all cable news combined now. It's how America communicates.
Ew.
And the fact that you've let them do this to thousands of other prominent conservatives and nationalists and haven't taken action yet, other than criticizing it, has green-lit the purges to now be exponential. This is your distribution network getting your speeches and your statements and your administration's truth out to counter the establishment lies. And they're just being annihilated on a daily basis. Over 200 million in just the last 3 days.
See, he's implying this 200 million accounts that are all gone.
Trump is as stupid enough to... Hey, Trump said that 3 million illegal immigrants voted in the election, so fuck off. Yeah.
But Alex is also being clear. Like, he's making it so overt. This is your distribution network, where your truth...
Yeah, he literally almost said, we're your propaganda network. You're losing us.
Right, right.
You're not going to get rid of Goebbels. That's not a good idea.
Like, I understand that I'm gone from social media, but I can still be some use, and I'm still making a profit, so
we're
cool. You know, like I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. I got my area of the market. No one's going to nudge me from that.
Right.
I am in trouble if you lose. My brand is fucked, right? You understand?
Yeah.
And you're going to lose
if
you don't have a ton of dank meme propagandists out there.
That does actually sound true,
You
though.
Need so many people distracting everybody with all of these manufactured bullshit lies.
Yeah. That
if you don't do it, my brand is fucked and my business is gone. Trump, get with the program.
Yeah, he's fundamentally
correct. You need to protect Count Dankula.
Build a wall around Dankula.
Everyone, get in formation.
Get in formation. We need a flanks.
Protect Scott Adams now.
Circle Dilbert's wagons.
All right, everybody, protect Catbert. This is like
Catbert doesn't need protection.
No. Dogbert.
Dogbert trouble.
Yes, Dogbert is behind all of this. This is like. It's so overt, the sort of the motivations behind this. It's just so much like, in the state we're in, I'm fucked if you go down.
Yeah.
And, you need these dudes. You need these crazy dudes.
Yeah.
You need these liars.
If you keep on this path, we're actually going to have to say you should become the king. And I don't want to do that.
Right.
I've been trying to keep people thinking that I don't want a king for so many years.
20 something.
Don't make me do it overtly.
It's a hard pitch.
Yeah.
For my audience to be monarchists.
Yeah.
I've been slow playing them for a long time, but, here we are. So, in this next clip, which is still from his address to the president, he just implies again, that, 200 million people gone, which
again, bananas.
Ludicrous.
And on and on. Every few hours, new giant list come out. We go click on them. They're dead. They're gone. Gone, 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 gone. Because nothing is being done by your administration. We've heard a bunch of talk about antitrust. We've heard a bunch of talk about injunctions. This is election meddling. Imagine if hundreds and hundreds of millions of people following Democrat sites and Democrat news organizations were suddenly being deleted in a coordinated fashion. There would be an outcry the likes of which the world's never seen.
So I assume he really hates it whenever Texas and Alabama and Georgia all purge voters from the rolls, right?
I don't think he cares.
Oh, you don't think he cares? Why? Why do you think that is, Dan?
Because it's all just dead people that the illegals are using to vote.
Oh, okay. Well, then never mind.
Bah. And it's not like there aren't any high-profile Democrats or left-leaning people who haven't been like demonetized on YouTube or kicked
absolutely.
Off Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's absurd. It's just most of them are like, oh, that sucks.
Yep.
Don't turn it into their new identity.
It's a good thing that that wasn't my primary source of income.
They recognize that it is a shitty free speech crusade to go on because it doesn't make sense. So in this next clip, Alex sort of threatens Trump vaguely.
I like that.
That if he doesn't get on board, something's gonna happen.
Trump, I'm sitting here watching these Lillipullies eat you alive and carve you up like a giant ham.
Oh, boy.
And damn it, I care about you, and my fate's tied to you, and I'm pissed, buddy. If you keep sitting there and taking this crap, I'm not going to put up with it anymore. Because it doesn't matter how good your agenda is and how many other great things you do. If you sit there and let these out-of-control criminals walk in here and steal our First Amendment and steal this damn election.
Ha-ha, we got it.
That I don't know what I'm going to be forced to do, but let me tell you, watching you let these bastards pull this off makes me sick.
So, I mean, that probably means nothing.
Sternly worded letter?
I mean, it. I don't know, whitehouse.gov petition that's vaguely racist? I mean, that idea is like, I don't know what I'm going to do if you don't get on board. I'll probably yell more.
Yeah.
But, like, also, like, the potential of danger in the vague notion of Alex's audience is such that I don't take something like that lightly. Like, it's funny because he's, like, personally an impotent force.
Yes.
But what he has the potential to inspire in people to do, has great negative potential.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
The idea of him feeling like he has nothing left, like, 'cause Trump has abandoned him or something, I could see it going real south.
Oh, absolutely.
And so a clip like that, it's always funny when he pretends he's going to leave Trump, just because we've seen it so many fucking times.
It's pathetic.
And because this is about memes.
Yeah. I really have a hard time believing that we live in a world where memes, whatever.
They're going to ruin it. They're going to kill everybody.
Whatever.
It's laughable on one level, but it also is the sort of thing where you gotta recognize, like, nah, this is kind of fucked up.
That'd be interesting if he all of a sudden is like, if it weren't for the NPC meme, you never would have gotten the tax reform through.
Well, and now, to talk more about that, is my friend who likes to hit things with a hammer.
Yeah.
So Alex ends this address to the president. I need to be clear. This is an address to the president.
Yes.
He keeps saying, Mr. President. Trump.
Directly.
Now, here's how he ends it.
And that's why Infowars.com stand strong as the tip of the spear. And that's why the globalists want us shut down, because we are the modern Paul Revere's. Thank you all for your support.
He thanks the audience for their support.
So is he talking about Trump? Thank you all for your support.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's leading up to an ad pivot that doesn't come at the end of his address to the president.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because that exact clip, like, that is how he ends up, like, you need to buy our supplement. You know, like,
that'd be funny if he asked Trump to buy a supplement.
God damn it, that would be amazing. Mr. President.
Mr. President, if you don't take Super Male Vitality, we'll never get back on Facebook.
I mean, it's not really that far off, because after he does this the message to the president that ends with thanking the audience for their support, so who was this really targeted at? Is it performatively targeted at the president?
Yeah.
And then so he goes to commercial, and he comes back from commercial, and here's what's going on.
But so often in the fight to keep this operation going, I forget to remind viewers and remind listeners that without you and word of mouth telling people about the show and how to find it, without you sharing the audio and the videos that we post to Infowars.com, the globalists are going to be able to carry out their plan to overthrow this country once and for all.
That sounds right.
That's why it's important for you to please watch this short presentation at the end of the show today that breaks down things we can personally do for our bodies and support the broadcast at the same time. And I'll see you, Lord willing, back tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central, with the Monday edition of the Alex Jones Show.
So he had a tape-recorded introduction to a pre-recorded infomercial about iodine.
That is, I don't know, jujitsu?
It's lame, is what it is. So that's the end of his show on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually a pretty more substantial Sunday show than many I've heard lately. So maybe he's trying again. Or maybe he's just back to that. Maybe the Sunday show is important again. So now we get to Monday. And this Instagram narrative, my friend, it's spiraled.
Oh, no.
It's getting close to home for Alex.
Everything is pouring in. I've got family calling me saying they've lost their Instagrams, and they're not even political. If they see American flags, if they see you're Christian, they're coming after you in an attempt to scare other Christians and other Americans to pull down the American flags, to stop talking about Jesus, to stop even calling yourselves Christian. Just like all the big ecumenical movements have done, this is here.
So Alex's family is losing their Instagrams. I don't know about that. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm certain it's not because of American flags or they say they're Christians.
Could be because they're sharing Alex Jones content.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Probably not. I don't know. I think it's just made up. There's so many things in Alex's world that I just have to be like, nope.
Yeah.
And that is one of them.
Otherwise.
Because it's such a service of an already false narrative.
Yeah.
The 200 million people getting kicked off Instagram.
Yeah, why would you even look into it?
Is the narrative that's being built on by my family members are calling me and saying they're being kicked off Instagram.
Yeah.
So like if the bedrock is a lie, I have to assume that this garnish is a lie too.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't care. So in this next clip, we get introduction of a guest who's going to show up later.
Okay.
But Alex is really excited to have him on.
Trevor Bauer.
No.
Oh.
We have a retired state police officer whose brother is a friend of the show, Joe Bannister's brother. We'll be popping in at the bottom of the middle of the next hour, and he will be getting into the inside scoop on what happened at the Garlic Festival, where several people were shot and killed, including a six-year-old boy. More than, 14 people now wounded in the gun-free zone.
So Joe Bannister's brother. Joe Bannister is one of those wild-ass tax protesters that Alex has had on for years.
Yeah.
And now apparently his brother is a cop and he's involved in the Garlic Festival. Alex says that he ran security for it. I can't confirm that. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm not really all that interested. When we get to his actual interview, he's got nothing to say. So I don't even know why he's on other than legitimately. We'll get to it. His expert analysis on this is, well, the cops got a warrant and searched the guy's house. Like, it's publicly available information.
Oh.
He's got nothing.
You know, delivering publicly available information with the authority of a retired cop seems to help Alex,
I guess. And he's related to Joe fucking Bannister.
Yeah, that's true.
So, great. Another one of the big things that's going on that Alex is covering over this time spin is
a good way of putting it.
That Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, is stepping down.
Right.
And Donald Trump has nominated John Ratcliffe to be his replacement.
Noted genius John Ratcliffe.
Alex is thrilled with this, and that's pretty funny. Here is a clip of him being thrilled, and I will explain why that's ridiculous on the other end.
And I've already gotten into the fact that Trump's removing the head of the Director of National Intelligence that oversees the 17 agencies and putting a bulldog in there that will really go after him, Congressman John Ratcliffe of Texas, former federal prosecutor. That's sending alarm bells throughout the deep state.
So, Alex, that might not be the best example of it, but he is all about it. He's very supportive of this. And it's hilarious how craven and spineless and full of shit Alex Jones is. If you need an example of how little he gives a fuck about anything he pretends to stand for, look no further than his support of Trump's nomination of John Ratcliffe as his Director of National Intelligence. For one thing, John Ratcliffe is not qualified at all for the position of DNI. He was the mayor of Heath, Texas, population approximately 6,000, for 8 years. During that time, George W. Bush appointed him U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Texas, a position he was mysteriously only in for a year before returning to public life. In 2014, he primaried the sitting Republican in Texas's 4th District in the House of Representatives. He was running against a 17-term incumbent in his opponent, Ralph Hall, who was 91 years old at that time. When Ralph Hall entered government in the Texas Senate, JFK was still alive. This was an old, old man he ran against. You could make your campaign slogan, he's 91, and probably win.
Yeah.
So Ratcliffe still...
He doesn't have 4 more years.
Right. Ratcliffe still only ended up winning with a narrow margin in the primary, but that district is so conservative that no Democrat even bothered to run, so he won his seat in Congress. In 2016, again, he ran against no Democrat candidate, guaranteeing an easy win. The position of DNI is a nonpartisan position, specifically.
Not anymore!
It's very important that the person who occupies that position not be someone who's invested in party politics, because should that person in charge of all of the country's intelligence agencies be someone beholden to a political party, you can very easily imagine the sort of things they could do to help their political party of choice.
No, I mean, can you imagine somebody abusing their power like that?
Never. Previous to Trump being elected, no one who occupied this position came from a background as a member of Congress. These were career diplomats or intelligence professionals. But when Trump got in, he appointed Dan Coats, who had 16 years in a career as a Republican senator from Indiana behind him, as well as an 8-year career in the House of Representatives. The politicization of this position is exceedingly dangerous, and, you know, we're seeing that happen. even if there were a presumption of impartiality to it, our intelligence community is a dangerous thing to have exist. When you introduce partisan politics into it, you have a recipe for real trouble. And it's definitely the kind of thing you see in authoritarian states.
Okay, so what you're saying is that were we to have a partisan director of national intelligence, somebody who can direct intelligence agencies to do things, and those things maybe are beholden to a hard right Republican lunatic who thinks that everybody's out to get him and wants to use intelligence services to further his own agenda. You think him appointing somebody who would do that is a bad idea?
I'm saying it's a dangerous possibility.
Yeah.
It's also worth pointing out that John Ratcliffe has a 100% conservative score from Heritage Action and ranks as one of the most conservative members in all of Congress.
He just yelled at Mueller. Isn't that why he's getting the job?
Yeah. And yeah. He was on the short list for Trump's attorney general possibilities when Sessions stepped down. Like he's in the team.
Yeah.
To give you some context, Ted Cruz only has a 98% score. Louis Gohmert only has a 96% score, as does Steve King. Ratcliffe is more conservative than those dudes. I have literally zero faith that he would be able to separate his political leanings from the job of being DNI, but I also think that's why Trump nominated him.
Yeah, obviously.
All that shit is disqualifying, but I know that Trump, or Alex, doesn't really care about any of that stuff. And here's something, though, that he should care about. In 2009, Ratcliffe became a partner at the law firm of Ashcroft Sutton Ratcliffe. Who is that Ashcroft, you ask? None other than John Ashcroft, George W. Bush's attorney general who Alex believed helped cover up 9/11. Ratcliffe is involved in the Bush administration as a U.S. attorney, then afterwards became partners in a law firm with one of Alex's huge bad guys. Endorsing this guy to lead all of the country's spy shit is essentially Alex admitting he didn't really mean all the stuff he used to say. This is seriously disqualifying stuff here, all in the name of trying to defend the nomination of a guy who probably doesn't stand a chance of being approved by Congress. Like, there's already indications that the Republicans aren't thrilled with this.
Yeah.
It's real embarrassing shit from Alex here. You really hate to see this kind of shithead behavior, even from someone you hate.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that, like, this guy who is a partner in a law firm with John Ashcroft. Alex, do you remember who you are?
No. No, he has no idea.
You hate John Ashcroft.
Well, he only covered up the Democratic part of 9/11. He didn't got the conservatives, libertarians. 9/11 was fine. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I got nothing. This is stupid.
Yeah, it's bad. So, another main piece of Alex's narratives here on the 29th are anti-Baltimore stuff.
Sure.
Which, of course, Alex proceeds to carry out as. Black people are not great.
Yeah.
So in this
doubling down on racism.
Oh, and then tripling. It's a mess.
Tripling down. Oh boy.
Yeah, he goes pretty hard. I mean, that stuff where he was making fun of Victor Blackwell is pretty clear.
Oh yeah.
It gets worse.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
So Jesus.
In this clip we're about to listen to here, Alex is making the argument that all the media talks about is white people attacking black people, but Alex has tons of videos of black people attacking white people. Which is a problem, just from a thinking standpoint, but this is just bad.
I see videos and compilations and underground articles and local news stories by police
underground
departments.
Underground articles.
Every day they don't get national attention.
From the Molochs.
Where gangs of racist black people target white people, old people, young people, and beat them, in some cases kill them, and then there's no news coverage of it, but there's news coverage everywhere about record numbers of whites targeting minorities, and then there isn't any evidence of that. They just lie, like FBI Director Wray did before Congress.
There's a lot of evidence of it.
Yeah, I would say...
There's mountains of evidence.
Overwhelming evidence of it.
Of white supremacist, white nationalist, motivated crimes.
Terrorism.
That's what's very important here. When Alex is talking about seeing videos of black people beating up white people, that's anecdotal at best. Sure, it's visceral, and it gets you, like, thinking about the idea, oh, there must be tons of black people beating up white people everywhere.
And it must be motivated by racism, because,
It doesn't stand as proof of anything.
Doesn't sound like it.
It's not good. And this is what he's relying on.
Right.
This, like, I see tons of videos of black people being, he might as well be just redoing the knockout game shit.
Yeah. I mean, how many fucking manifestos have we had to read recently?
Last week?
Yeah.
Enough?
Too many.
Yeah.
And none of them have come from black people.
Nope. Alex is still trying to defend Trump's comments about Baltimore, and I don't know. This is just stupid.
And the murder maps show the thousands of murders a year in Baltimore, only rivaled by Chicago.
So
thanks, buddy.
This is classic shit.
Yep.
The first thing we can tell here from Alex's coverage of the whole Trump Elijah Cummings thing is that Alex has never seen The Wire, which honestly doesn't surprise me. He's also apparently never read Homicide: A Year on the Killing Streets, which also doesn't surprise me because it's a book.
Yeah.
Obviously, there is a very complicated situation and a lot of issues at play in terms of a city like Baltimore. And like I said earlier, far be it from me to pretend that I actually can explain all of it to you or even advocate for what the right solution is. Yeah. I am not, it's outside of my lane to try and pretend I have that kind of expertise.
And I sure as hell don't.
What I can tell you, however, is politely, to explain to Alex. Alex, you listening? I'm going to give you a little bit of your own medicine where you gave a message to the president. I'm going to do that for you.
Here we go.
There are not thousands of murders a year in Baltimore. That is fucking insane.
That would be too many.
That number might be right about a place like Caracas or a couple cities in Brazil, but no American city is anywhere near that level of murder. In 2017, there were 341 murders in Baltimore. Alex doesn't care about reality. He cares about optics and the presentation and the narrative. It sure looks like there were thousands of murders in that lawless city, so why not say there are? Alex, this is shitty work. You need to do better, because these are just numbers. They're statistics. You can find these numbers. And even just talking about total murders is a pointless statistic.
Yeah.
You got to talk about things in terms of rates. And when you do, you
find... 100,000.
And when you do, you... The numbers become less meaningful. Like Chicago in 2017, I believe, was the ninth highest murder rate in the country. All of it's still too high. And yeah. There's things that need to be done. But when you just, like, sure, Chicago had 300 more murders in 2017 than Baltimore, but the murder rate was much lower. It was almost half.
Yeah.
Why is that? How do you integrate this into your conversation, right, Alex? You can't.
Of course, there are more murders when there are more people.
Well, certainly that,
you know,
that
just as a function of society, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of humanity, I suppose.
Right. He's trying to tie this connection to, like, it being blue states, because Baltimore and Chicago. But if you look at it by murder rate, there's tons of red states or the cities. Like, the number one is St. Louis.
Yeah.
That has the highest murder rate, and that's a red state. Like, it doesn't matter. This conversation, blue state, red state, doesn't fucking matter. But you can create the optics that it does if you use stats poorly.
Yeah.
And that's all Alex is doing, because he doesn't care about violence. He cares about using it to attack the people of the other party in a duplicitous and dishonest way.
And he absolutely does not care about improving that, mainly because it still allows him to use that as a cudgel whenever he wants.
Yep. So all this is, like, Alex is clearly lying about a lot of issues that are that involve race. And that's ugly, and it sucks to see. But you should know one thing.
What's that?
Bill Gates.
Yeah.
He's trying to brainwash everybody.
I do believe.
He's trying to brainwash people against whites.
Sure.
And I'm going to get into the incredible level of brainwashing that white people are inherently evil and are inherently bad by white academics and others who are being financed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's coming up. Speaking of financed, I'm being financed by you.
Perfect.
The American people. And the main reason they sued me with the fake Sandy Hook lawsuits and all that, they've now admitted, was to try to get into our finances to discover who finances us. And they're now beside themselves.
You could tell
us.
We're
not funded by the Russians or the Mercers or anybody else. We're funded by you, the viewer, you, the listener, buying products direct from us.
So first of all, I'm excited to hear about this big story he's got about Bill and Melinda Gates brainwashing everyone against white people. I'm thrilled to find out if there's any truth to that. Spoiler alert, there's not. But also, if this is true, what Alex is saying, no, not that part.
Oh.
It's not true.
Okay.
But if it's true that Alex has had all these people digging around in his finances trying to find out who funds him, and it turns out it's just the American people, Alex, why are you fighting so hard to, like, make sure that they don't get access to why?
No.
Why are you creating a million
legal
hurdles?
Look over here. Jangly keys, Dad.
Alex, if all of your money does come from, like, a really successful, amazing supplement sale and books and water filtration business, let's see those numbers, baby. I want to tip my hat to you. I want to congratulate you on a business well run.
Yeah.
Why do you make all this so secretive to the point where in depositions, people like your head of HR, your father, other people who are involved in the business say, I have no idea what the fuck's going on.
Nope.
Why? Why does no one know what your business model is? Why is everyone obfuscating and hiding all this shit if it weren't something shady?
Yeah.
Please, Alex, you fucking idiot.
Well, you know, he has he lives in accountantless resistance, I believe is who was it?
Louis Beam?
Yeah.
Perhaps. So I've been excited to hear Alex chime in on something.
What's that?
This whole Let's Storm Area 51 thing.
He hasn't chimed in?
I'm not sure if he has. I missed some days because of the move. But I hadn't heard him talk about it in the episodes I'd heard. And I'm like, he's got to have a take on that.
Hasn't the date already passed?
No, I think it's in September.
It's in September?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
It's a joke.
No. It's going to happen. Haven't you read about December 12th, 2012?
I heard about that.
Yep.
Leo Zagami told me about that.
Yeah, they were storming Area 51.
So I knew that, like, this is something that Alex probably has got to talk about. First of all, he loves memes. So he should probably be thrilled at this because all it is a joke meme.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what, like, how he was going to land on it. And to say that I was surprised to hear his take on it would be an understatement.
I've been watching this Area 51 situation. And my original thoughts 3 weeks ago are dead on. And I'm sure you had the same thoughts, but let me just explain something. And I'm sure you all know this. Anyone that's had a Facebook page the last few years knows that you have to pay money basically to have one now.
Absolutely not. I've had a Facebook page for so long. I've had a Facebook page since it was thefacebook.com.
Yeah.
You do not have to pay to use it. You have to pay to advertise on it. You always have had to. Alex,
That's called a business model.
Right.
That's how they make money.
Everybody who has a Facebook page knows that you gotta pay to have one.
Mm.
Unless you're just a private person they want to spy on.
Spy.
And then sell your data. But if you try to start a Facebook for your dog grooming place, they're going to say terms of service now and I'll let you have it.
I have a Facebook page that is about a podcast about how you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I have paid a couple times, like $5, to experiment with ads and found them to be not worth it.
Pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only money I've ever put.
Yeah.
Maybe $10?
$10?
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, terms of service, Dan.
I've never had Facebook come to me and be like, why are you running this?
Terms of service.
All right.
If you do one for your church, they're going to demand money now. Google's not letting people promote Christianity. I mean, this is just, they're taking American flags off Nike tennis shoes. They're telling universities. The universities are saying, don't say America or American. This is meant to be over the top. I'm going to break that down next hour because what am I getting at?
He is really struggling
what
to
is
figure out
at?
What his what's my point about this Area 51 thing.
I was going to say, hold on. So he said he was right about 3 weeks ago, as were most of you.
About Area 51.
And what you got
to
understand is
that
Facebook charges you to have a Facebook page.
They're going
to
kick off all the Christians.
Anyways.
You can't have a dog grooming salon
right.
page.
Anyways, what does that have to do with Area 51?
This individual is a cutout.
Okay.
And I want him on the show. He wants to come on here and defend himself, but I've seen him. We're going to play the clip next hour of him doing a local news interview.
He doesn't.
The individual that has organized 1.6 million people to storm
not actually
a Skunk Works space plane base.
What?
An Air Force aircraft testing facility that's got nuclear weapons, chemical weapons stored at it, toxic waste dumps. Reportedly, it's where they haul decommissioned nuclear reactors out of submarines.
Okay.
It's a giant waste dump. And they're saying 1.6 million are going to storm it, and Facebook leaves it up and watches it. What I'm trying to say is they won't let a Christian organize a pro-life vigil. They won't let a conservative member of Congress even reach their members on Facebook. But they'll let some trendy dude who wears video game outfits sit up there and go, we're going to have 1.6 million people storm a military base. Facebook was set up by the left and the CIA. So was Google. They are 100% running this.
I would argue an alternative explanation, and that is that conservative members of Congress are not very interesting, and a joke, meme, event like this is pretty funny.
It is.
And people have done a lot of marketing for it on their own with little TikTok videos, and like it's caught on as a meme, and that has led people promote this joke event.
Yeah.
And like the CIA started it, and in the description of it is,
sure,
let's see them aliens.
Yeah.
The fuck out of here.
That sounds like that.
The alternative explanation that is absolutely the truth is this is a funny thing and people liked it.
It's really funny.
It's attractive to people and they're interested in it in a way that they're not in your bullshit bigoted content.
Yeah.
And the content of all these other whiny shadow banned Republicans. Fuck off. This is just appealing to people and you're not.
God, that's a bummer. He should be jumping in on this, right? Although then again, he literally can't because his listeners would actually try and storm Area 51, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
If they thought that they had a 1.6 million strong, army behind them.
He does.
Yeah.
The 1% of gun owners.
Yeah, that's troublesome.
I think that, Alex would end up turning into like that Stephen Kelly, Storm the Getty guy.
Yeah.
The Getty Museum and the demons underneath. Yeah, I don't know. Alex does bring this back up later, and I would play it now because then there would be thematic cohesion.
Yeah.
You know, like he has another comment about Area 51 like an hour later in the show. I was thinking about this, like, why don't I organize the episode into like, this is the topic he's talking about and here are all the things he says on it.
Fuck chronology?
Well, it's because I one of the things that I think is important is to like express the disjointedness and repetition of this show.
That's a good,
He hits the same topics repeatedly throughout the course of the show,
right,
but he never gets really into them when he does, and he jumps back and forth from them in a way that's disorienting to your mind.
Yeah.
So when he brings back up the Area 51 thing later, you remember that he's brought it up, so there's some familiarity as if the topic's already been covered.
Right.
It's intentional. It's a strategy of never needing depth, but still creating the appearance of it,
mm-hmm,
through disorienting his audience with artificial familiarity, I guess is what I would say. Artificial familiarity with the story.
Right.
Oh, I know that.
Presenting an angle without any depth, and then because you're bringing it up later... Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a strategy that
I wouldn't
employs.
Say that that's intentional.
I think it
perhaps
is.
It was.
I think it is on some
you
level.
Think so?
But I think it's also necessary because he couldn't do it the other way. Mm. He couldn't do a show where he actually got into the nuts and bolts of something.
Of course.
Because if he did, he would end up doing like a show like ours.
Yeah.
Because like, he would end up accidentally debunking everything he talks about.
That would be wildly unpopular.
Ah, shit, I'm wrong again. Guys, sorry about this. This was just bullshit.
That would be hilarious if
this headline looked good.
If we believed, it'd be even funnier if we were ardent fans of Alex Jones.
Oh.
And we were just constantly disappointed. If but we're I like, could, I'm not going to give up on him yet.
If I could do this all over, I might have tried to write the show like that.
Yeah.
Like,
we're constantly being disappointed.
We might want to try one episode like that as a special episode. I don't think I have the performance chops to do it though. I don't think I have the commitment. So speaking of commitment, Alex is a committed racist. And,
yes.
In this next clip, he talks about how the Chinese are racist.
Okay.
Except some of them. Now, mic down for this because he does give an example of one specific
person
who is not.
Mitch McConnell's wife?
That's the Chi-Coms, who are the most homogeneous, meaning pure, if you use that term, genetically similar, and the most racist people on Earth. A lot of nice Chinese Americans. My sister's South Korean adopted. Love her to death.
Wait a second.
What?
Wait a second.
No, 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 no. What?
Yeah.
Dude, just say like Bing Bong or some other racist version of like, oh, they're all the same out there.
Yeah, I mean,
Christ.
It's pretty wild. It's like, you know, the Chinese are the most racist people. Not all of them, like my Korean sister.
Yeah. What Chinese country are you from? Laos? Yeah. Is that the one you're from?
Mm.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, pretty overt.
That is bananas. Yeah. That really is.
I do love those moments when Alex is trying to like pretend that he's not racist and other people are, and then he just embodies a fully
twice as racist.
Yeah, fully fucked up position.
My sister is South Korean.
Right.
So some Chinese people aren't racist.
Congratulations, Alex.
Bananas.
Your brain works great.
Yeah.
So now we get back to the Gateses, the Bill and Melinda Gates. Again, this is the representation of the disjointedness. He brought it up earlier, and now he brings it up again.
They know how to sell us out and ship drugs into our cities. They know how to break up our families so we can be more easily managed because we're such uppity Americans. Instead, if you were a real elite, you would have promoted Americana that's so powerful, and then we would have ruled the planet through ideology and free market, and you could have sat on top of it, but you had needle dingling syndrome. I call it the chicken SH-T dimension, and you're from it. Bill,
I haven't heard
Gates.
The chicken shit dimension before.
He's brought it up before.
No. I mean, I haven't heard it for a while.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that it's not just something he said once.
Yeah.
Because it's lame as hell.
It's so...
It seems even weirder to imagine that he wasn't making it up, that he uses that.
Yeah.
They're from the chicken shit dimension.
What is that?
Whatever.
The needle dick dimension?
So we already heard earlier in the episode Alex saying that his big main gripe with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is they're brainwashing people against whites. Earlier.
Right.
So this clip exists within that context.
Yes.
That's what makes them part of the chicken shit dimension.
Oh, that's what makes them part of the chicken shit.
Right.
Dimension.
And they could have like lorded over a free market world dominated by white people if they hadn't decided to brainwash people against whites.
It does kind of seem like what he's saying is you guys fucked up for you.
Well,
you know, like you guys could have been really rich if you ran.
As opposed to the really rich.
Yeah.
I also think that now, after having that episode about the British Israelism and Christian identity ideas, it's tough to hear that sort of, you know, you could have had world dominion.
Or then
not hear a little bit of that in there as well. I think that's going to keep popping up.
Yeah.
So I also, you know, he's talking about the globalists and the Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, destroying the family. And I'd like to read to you from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Oh, God.
This is from Protocol number 10. Quote, we shall destroy among the goyim the importance of the family and its educational value.
Yeah.
This is followed up with, quote, in this way we shall create a blind, mighty force which will never be in a position to move in any direction without the guidance of our agents, set at its head by our as leaders of the mob. The people will submit to this regime because it will know that upon these leaders will depend its earnings, gratifications, and the receipt of all kinds of benefits. So, I mean, what he's describing about the plan to destroy the family in order to make us less able to have our political will and dumb us down is directly from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
It was really weird when I read those, and Protocol number 11 was, and we'll send people to the chicken shit dimension.
Right. Also, it doesn't trace back to the Protocols, but this accusation that Jews are responsible for international drug trade, I mean, Alex isn't making that accusation, but it is an accusation that's been fairly popular in deeply anti-Semitic communities. In 2012, the Iranian vice president, Mohammad Reza Rahimi, gave a speech where he said that Zionists ran the drug trade and, quote, the Islamic Republic of Iran will pay for anybody who can research and find one single Zionist who is an addict. They do not exist. This is proof of their involvement in the drugs trade.
Ooh.
Yeah. A European diplomat told the Irish Times under the condition of anonymity, quote, this was definitely one of the worst speeches I've ever heard in my life. And even an Iranian Shia cleric, was like, no good.
Dude, I can throw a rock at one of my friends and you'll find a Zionist addict.
So, like, you have this, like, this idea of destroying the families for the specific purpose that Alex is talking about, which is a direct parallel to the Protocols. and they're bringing drugs in, which is, you know, that is also mirroring anti-Semitic propaganda that has existed over the years. So I think it's just important to bring that up whenever he's just being very clearly derivative.
White supremacist.
Well, mirroring.
Yeah.
So Alex, in this next clip, kind of thinks that he's already gotten to the news about Bill and Melinda Gates.
Really don't think
so. But again, that's a function of the disjointed nature of the show.
Yeah.
He himself kind of thinks he's covered it already.
Right.
But he hasn't.
And I said I'd get to have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in a huge detailed report from Daily Caller News Foundation found that it's all being funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's the main funding group of all this Black Lives Matter, race riot, kill the cops, white people are inherently evil. I was going to cover that, but I guess I already did, kind of, didn't I? You want to hear this, professor? You want to hear all these so-called authors being paid $12,000 a pop to go brainwash your kids and tell how whites are inherently bad? I'll get to that later. I'll get to that next hour.
Okay, we'll get to that later.
Sure. Sounds good.
I thought you already kind of covered it. Yeah, I get to later.
That is pretty funny that at the end of that, he's like, I'll get to that later.
I hear
like
the music.
He forgot exactly what he was going to say.
Yeah.
And he heard the music, so he's like,
I don't have a handle on this shit.
Get out of jail free.
I read a headline.
Yeah.
So, he's talking about this being like the $12,000 a pop example professors. He said, you want to hear this professor? He mentioned the Daily Caller. So I went and read this article that Alex is basing his narrative on in the Daily Caller, and I don't know if I see the same thing as he sees here. Literally, the only connection any of this has to the Bill and Melinda Gates and their foundation is that they are listed as one of the clients that has hired the person that this hit piece article is about.
Of course.
The article discusses Robin DiAngelo, who holds a PhD in multicultural education and is a well-respected lecturer and author in the field. She's the person who coined the term white fragility. So naturally, she's become a very specific target for the expression of exactly that.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Guys, this is the worst.
Literally, the entire thrust of this article here seems to be that she charges $12,000 for a speaking appearance and that somehow that invalidates her scholarship and all of her work because she's white. I'm not sure.
Jesus.
What this article doesn't do is give any context to the rate of $12,000 for a speaking engagement.
A Daily Caller article about the person who invented white fragility as a term didn't give context?
$12,000 for a speaking engagement is not really that high of a rate for a person, particularly a leader in their field, for that to be the rate they charge. A simple search of talent booking websites will tell you that. For instance, Ben Shapiro charges between $50,000 and $100,000 for a speech. Jordan Peterson asks for $100,000 to $200,000, as does Sean Hannity. Alex's buddy Candace Owens charges between $20,000 and $30,000. James O'Keefe is right in the same ballpark as Miss DiAngelo with a price range of $10,000 to $20,000 per speech. Bill O'Reilly charges $100,000 to $200,000. John Ashcroft requires $50,000 to $100,000 to take a break from running a law firm with Alex's preferred choice for Director of National Intelligence. Alex's buddy and noted pervert Ted Nugent charges $50,000 to $100,000 for a speech. I think you get the point. For people who are not in the fields of either being an in-demand lecturer or booking in-demand lecturers, $12,000 for a booking might sound really high, but ultimately it's not. When you look at the larger picture of the industry, it's kind of on the lower end of an in-demand speaker.
Yeah.
This is a cheap trick that propagandists can use to paint someone who gives lectures about social justice or economic equality as a hypocrite, and then they get to feel entitled to just ignore the entire message. It's a pathetic strategy of self-defense, and honestly, in this situation, it goes a long way towards proving that Robin DiAngelo deserves that speaking rate.
Yeah.
Because they're manifesting what she's talking about. Her big thing is the concept of white fragility, and now you have the Daily Caller, founded by noted white nationalist Tucker Carlson, crying bloody murder about her charging a reasonable rate for her services, largely because they're afraid of the topic she's lecturing on. Literally, this is white fragility on full display. If it weren't, then this is somehow about the revulsion they have at the decadence of speaking fees. There's way better targets they could choose than DiAngelo. Also, Tucker Carlson charges over $70,000 to give a speech, so him and the Daily Caller can go straight fuck themselves.
I don't understand why, like, did you get screwed over in the Equifax breach?
No. I checked and I wasn't affected.
Yeah. I did. I don't understand.
Hey, congratulations on that money.
You know what? We're probably not going to get it.
Hey, congratulations on that.
Because they are going to run out of money.
Whatever.
The settlement is bullshit. I don't understand why those hackers aren't just going after these idiots. Like, it's just steal their money, Robin Hood style. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know if
I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to double down on your that position. So there's nothing here that's really involved with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, except that they're listed as one of the people who have paid for her services,
paid for her
speech.
That's so, as close as they get.
And it's one of a number of groups or organizations that are listed in the article. This isn't about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation specifically being her patrons or whatever. It's not. Alex is embellishing all of that shit.
Of course.
Because he wants to. He hates the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He thinks that they're brainwashing people against whites. And when he says...
And he's white fragile.
He says that, when he says that they're brainwashing people against whites, he's using this article as the justification for that narrative.
Yeah.
So it's all bullshit. It's all just flimsy nonsense.
It's all white fragility.
So now we get back to Area 51.
The storming of Area 51, just the beginning, because it's prompting. It's getting people ready. It's engineering the public to, oh, it's just a joke. They're just organizing something else. Nothing will come of that. But it will be storm the White House. It will be overthrow the government, but by the globalists, because that's what Facebook has been set up to do. Suppress the good people, empower the bad. Help Al-Qaeda, suppress the Christians. Suppress the conservatives, unleash the leftist Antifa.
You really had a pause there before conservatives.
Yeah.
Wonder where his brain was heading. So, Alex, his commercial time on the show has become a real sad place. Whereas before we had such fun things as Where to Hide Your Guns and
of course
Diamond Gusset Jean songs and
Random
everybody
hits.
Was having a great time.
Fun.
Here's a commercial that he's playing now.
Subscribestar.com/Alex Jones. That's where the next adventure against tyranny begins. That's where I'm going to be posting exclusive content.
Content. Couldn't do a second take on that?
It's pre-recorded.
This shitty fucking low-rent commercial for his off-brand Patreon.
It's almost he hit con on purpose. Like, this is a content.
I also checked back in on his Subscribestar.
How's it going?
We still have way more donors
than him. Ah, Jesus.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
I feel like we're gloating, but at the same time, I don't feel like I am.
I don't care.
I
want to
gloat. Insane that he only has 400 people who are donating to his Subscribestar. It's been months that it's been up, and he has millions of listeners. This is a very dangerous-looking lack of engagement.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we get now to John Bannister. He shows up. Joe Bannister's brother.
The old JB.
He wants to talk about the Garlic Festival. And again, he got nothing on this. We have really no insight. Here is what I would describe as his expert analysis.
Certainly these type of things take, you know, hours, if not days, to hash out. And I do understand that this morning they did serve a search warrant at the suspect's residence. So I'm sure they will learn as the days go by what this shooter's motivations were.
Fine. I got nothing against that. He's saying that, you know, they're looking into it, they're investigating, and we'll know whenever we know.
That's pretty responsible.
Right. That's not what Alex wants.
No. Alex wanted him to say that it was Antifa, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I would assume so. Cause that's kind of, I mean, a
false flag.
Alex's narrative boils down to, it's like, they train everybody. What you do if you want to kill yourself is go and commit suicide by cop by shooting up this place, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, what we need is more guns at garlic festivals.
Of course.
So that's what we get.
Yep.
So, that interview is real boring. As are all the ones with Joe Bannister too. Must run in the family.
Nice.
So we get
him.
Alex then starts rambling about, like, the globalists need to bring in the global government now.
Oh.
For a specific reason. And I don't think I agree with this. I think it's just wrong.
Because the globalists are the remnants of the robber barons and the royalty and all the corrupt groups that are out there. They're planning something even bigger to bring in planetary control because all these advanced technologies are coming forward now. And they want control of those because there's about to be breakaway technologies that have already been discovered where we'll be multiplanetary so fast, we'll be interstellar so fast, We'll be intergalactic. We'll be interdimensional
planetary,
so fast it'll make your head spin. You think fire was an invention?
You think fire was an invention?
I think fire was an invention.
I love the shifting goalposts of why the globalists are doing what they're doing.
Oh,
like, it's changed so much over the course of his career. And I love that now, in the present day, his excuse is they need to make a one world government because we're about to go to space and they want to be in control of Mars or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like,
I don't understand.
I don't know.
What are you missing?
I'm missing the jump from when it used to be about, like, creating just a dictatorship and making a prison planet.
Right.
Like, I'm missing the time when it was a financially motivated thing.
Yeah.
I'm missing that jump. I don't know.
I think my favorite part of all the globalists' plans is that all of them, according to Alex, are incredibly long-term.
Oh, yeah.
And yet
they change.
They change so frequently on a dime.
And can I also say that, like, I don't know. I have mixed feelings generally about the idea of world government. You know, I especially think that the wrong people administering it would be the worst, literal worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah.
But I do think that some sort of collaboration globally is probably required.
It's impossible.
But also, like, if we were to go into space and start colonizing parts of space, we would need a one world government.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the alternative is, what are we going to have, space wars between us and, like, Russia? Us and China? Like,
obviously.
Like, other countries are going to be able to make rockets and shit. What are you going to do? Are we going to go to war to keep them from going to space?
Well, and
are
literally,
we going to have a war in space?
Literally, China and Russia are gearing up for a space war.
Right. I mean, it's stupid. The idea that we would be able to leave the planet and still have tensions between us just based on where on this fucking earth we came from is absurd. The idea that all the progress you could make in making a Mars colony, let's say, like that seriously amazing advance in, like, if that's possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Which it isn't. Or it, most likely isn't.
It could all be jeopardized by China coming in with space rockets. Why would we ever want to make it to that next level while there's still the possibility that we're going to fight with each other and ruin all of it? It's silly.
I mean, to replay the colonization wars of Europe from the 1600s
would be
I mean, it wouldn't even be catastrophic. It would destroy humanity.
Right.
You know, like, of course, okay, so we destroyed New America on Jupiter's moon. Maybe what we should have done instead is just destroy America on Earth.
Right.
You know?
It's easier. Right.
Why would we send rockets all the way out there when we could just
blow
up America?
It seems like an incredibly dystopian possibility, the idea of branching out and colonizing space without absolute collaboration between countries.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like childish shit whenever you consider the stars.
Yeah. Although I have seen G Gundam, and in that situation, what happens is every country colonizes different places in space and then creates very racist robots to fight on Earth. So.
Hmm.
Yeah. Interesting series.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So this is the point of the episode where Alex gets into the Marianne Williamson video, and he plays it, and he's just sort of like making fun of her, but not interrupting it because he wants it to be presented.
Yeah.
So she's leading these people in apologizing for the horrors of slavery in our country's history. Alex refuses to engage with the ideas that the lingering effects economically, sociologically, politically, that have rippled down from the times of slavery do still impact people today. Yeah. He doesn't really want to talk about that.
No,
he wants
not
to talk about how he shouldn't feel guilty about slavery. He didn't do it. No one did it. Almost nobody did it. Now, much like him saying that the Chinese are racist, except for his Korean sister, Alex starts off on this clip being like, I refuse to feel guilty about slavery, and then says something deeply racist.
Marjorie Williamson, Mrs. Moonbeam,
nice,
leads white people in collective apology. Remember this a few weeks ago? To African Americans, even though if your great grandfather was an axe murderer, that's not your fault. You're an independent person, but only 2% of people here until 1867 had slaves. That was in the South. Most people who are European ancestors came here after. It doesn't matter. Because even if your ancestors did have slaves, it's not your fault. But see, that's total tyranny.
Is that what it is?
That's slavery, saying because you're a certain color, or because your ancestors are, this is not going to happen to you. It's amazing. It's collective guilt. It's what they did in Zimbabwe and Rhodesia,
no.
where they rounded up all the whites and killed them. This is so evil. Because they...
Wow. Oh, boy.
Alex, is your example is Rhodesia, bro. That's where you're going?
Yep. Yep, that'll do it.
Your example is Rhodesia.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Boo!
Yep.
It's insane to me that he's trying to argue against him needing to feel guilty about slavery, and immediately where his mind goes is a repressive white supremacist apartheid government that was the remnant of a brutal colonial system that was put in place in modern day Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
That is so fucked up to me that that's the example he goes to, and he doesn't think like, that wasn't a good example. I should probably walk that back. That was,
That was, so the headliner, last week, while I was at, Zany's, we had this really stupid conversation, on his part where he was trying to say that.
First of all, I'd like to say that we had a stupid conversation on his part is a
that
fucking.
That I ran away from as fucking, soon as he's.
And there's a wild way to phrase it.
Here's what ended it. He said, no, I think whites are afraid, mainly because if minorities, cause we're gonna have, whites are gonna be the minority soon, and they're gonna do to whites what we did to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, and left. Mm-hmm. No,
but
if you believe that,
but at least
they are fucked up.
But it's almost, admirable in some way that he's able to articulate it.
He did admit that that's what.
Because Alex clearly has some of those thoughts in his head,
absolutely.
But he refuses to articulate it that way.
Right.
Which kind of makes it more difficult to deal with his bullshit.
Right.
At least with someone like that guy, you'd hope that there was a possibility of a dialogue, you know, cause he's willing to express it.
No, I think there is, but,
I don't want to have
I
it.
Don't
and I don't
do it
judge
right
you
now.
For not.
I'm not going to do this in the green room. I don't have
right,
the time.
Right. So Alex is a little bit more racist in this clip, and also he points out that some churches are putting out the donation tray, but they're not taking that money and giving it to God.
Uh-oh.
They're giving it to somebody else.
Paula White.
Because they know America has this Christian, moral, loving, love your brother. They exploit it, the left does. And so now the Methodist church, all the big churches are First Methodist Church here in Austin, Texas. Takes up collection plates for Bill and Melinda Gates. I have family that used to go there. I've sat there and heard it. My family finally quit going there. I had some family went there. I mean, you talk about satanic. When we come back, I'm going to show you the Bill and Melinda Gates funding, what they're teaching. White devils coming and teaching racism. But because whites rejected racism, they teach it to black people now and brown people. Stay with us. I'm Alex Jones.
Wow.
Wow.
That's wild.
Is the prosperity gospel preachers are usually on the left, right?
I don't know.
Are
it's
they,
hard to say.
I'm sure none of them are in Trump's good graces.
Well, I know one of them did do the prayer at his inauguration.
Yeah.
Paula White Cain.
She did, didn't she?
I don't
and
know.
She's
I
his national spiritual advisor or whatever
yeah.
it is. Yeah.
And also married to a guy in Journey.
Yeah. Which is a fun fact.
Yeah.
That's like a pop-up video kind of fact.
Her husband
VHL.
Has a writing credit on Don't Stop Believing. I don't know. I can't imagine a church being like, all right, so we're going to take donations for one of the richest people in the world.
Yeah, that does sound right.
It doesn't seem, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, in this next quote, we find out. Also, when he's saying that, like, what they're teaching, all this stuff, like, that is just based on that Daily Caller article we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
There is nothing more to it than that. It
Great.
Is just that.
Great.
And then Alex spins it out, man. Bill Gates is doing some real fucked up stuff.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is promoting white genocide.
Okay.
It's promoting that white people are inherently bad. And it's funding white academics to go out and teach that the West is inherently evil.
So wait. The West is inherently evil. You're saying that they're trying to get white genocide and say that white people are evil. So the white...
Wait, are you trying to say that the West and the white are interchangeable?
It's almost like he has no distinction between them.
They seem to be meaning the same thing.
Seems like white identity is Western culture
sure
to him.
Sure seems like
so,
it.
Stop trying to pretend it's not, dumb fuck.
Yeah, you're a white supremacist.
You can't hide behind terms you use interchangeably and assume that people aren't going to notice and call you out on it. Yeah. Every single time it's exactly the same thing as with the preacher David J. Smith when he talks about the children of Esau being Jews.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing. When Alex talks about Western civilization, Western culture, he's talking about whiteness.
Yeah.
Is what he's doing.
You bet.
Anyway, in this next clip, he just makes up that this professor is mainly funded by the Gates Foundation.
The particular lady profiled in the Daily Caller News Foundation is paid $12,000 a day.
So that
a day.
That already is a misrepresentation.
What a fucking dick.
That is already a misrepresentation because it implies that she's getting paid every day
as opposed
to maybe one or two engagements a year.
Yeah.
It's such bullshit.
What a dick.
And she's a white lady. She's got the customary weird vampire chicken neck going on.
There it is. Gotta attack
her. She goes around and teaches white people they're bad. And who's her main funder? Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
He doesn't have anything to back that up. He is just asserting it based on nothing and pointing to this article that doesn't prove that.
Yeah.
It's bullshit, man. He is just saying whatever he wants. It's crazy. Like when you really get down to it and you trace down the things that he bases his rhetoric and his narratives on, it's so clear that, like, nothing can be trusted.
Yeah.
Anything could just be made up. He reports made up shit with the same confidence that he does reading a headline.
Yeah.
It's
really
crazy.
Does seem like she has grounds for a libel lawsuit, right? I don't think there's any way that this can't be construed as deliberately lying about somebody.
Yeah, no, with malice.
Yeah, with malice.
Yeah, I think you could.
She could sue the shit out of him.
I think she probably could. Yeah. I also think it probably isn't worth her time.
No, of course not.
But yeah, definitely. I think what he's doing is slander.
Yeah.
Because it's not written down.
Yeah.
I'll make a transcript of this.
I apologize. I apologize for mistaking the language.
So earlier, Alex pointed out that white people have rejected racism, and so now they're teaching it
really
to non-whites.
Don't think that's true.
No, it's not.
I really don't think that's
true. It's not. But it's interesting to see how he conceives of how white people got rid of this racism.
Well, it was because the South Korean Chinese person told him.
That could be it.
Because it's white people that got rid of tribalism
really?
To Christianity and were the first to say we can have a multicultural system based on Jesus Christ and the blessings that come from it, the free market. And I don't care if you're black, Hispanic, Asian, whoever you are. If you accept the teachings of Christ and you accept free market ideas, it works. Everybody is wealthy. We come together. It's God's plan. It really is.
So what we seem to be looking at now is not only like theocratic government ideas, but also theocratic economy ideas.
Yeah.
Which are really weird.
This is bananas.
Yeah. So Alex and his cohorts love to freely just pick and choose from the New and Old Testaments in order to make their cases for what Christianity should be and what they ascribe to Jesus. So I feel like I should be able to play that game every now and again, too. So I'm going to
have fun.
As long as Alex wants a biblical basis for the economy, I feel like we should maybe go all the way and reintroduce the law of Jubilee.
Ooh!
As laid out in Leviticus 25.
She shoots fireworks out of her.
Different Jubilee.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
The law of Jubilee lays out that every 50 years, property, even property that's been bought and sold in the intervening years is to revert back to the original owner, and that if you bought some land you were living on, you're to return to your family's original property. It's laid out that if you sell someone land closer to the year of Jubilee, you have to charge less for it, since that person is going to have less time on this land.
That's a fun, wacky economic system. I like that.
Mm-hmm. This is a law, the law of Jubilee. It exists because there is no private property rights for humans.
Right.
As is explicitly expressed, quote, this is God speaking.
Hold on. Let me prepare myself for that.
The land must not be sold permanently because the land is mine and you reside in my land as foreigners and strangers. if you buy a house, you have to give that house back in the year of Jubilee, except in cases where that house is in a walled city. If the city has walls, you get to keep the house. But if there aren't walls on that city, then you gotta give the house back.
Ah, man, I love a good old throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what economic system sticks.
It's a weird set of rules, but it definitely isn't free market.
No.
So Alex got to deal with that. Also, if you want to go New Testament in Jesus' actual words, in Matthew 6:19-21, he says, quote, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Or there's that whole passage in Luke 6 where Jesus tells people to lend other people money with no expectation of being repaid.
No. Usury is fine, Dan.
And to be merciful, quote, "just as your father is merciful." There's a lot of folks who try to make the argument that Jesus would have been on their side and supported their ideology if he were around today, and I'm equally suspicious of all of them. There's so much in the Bible that you can really pick and choose a lot to make, you know, a whole lot of seemingly contradictory arguments. That being said, Jesus was into free market capitalism is maybe one of the bigger stretches you could make.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody defending.
If you're a
biblical scholar and you think Jesus was into the free market, you're actually a liar.
Ah, here's our way around that.
How do we do that?
Alex is not a biblical scholar.
There we go.
So in this next clip, Alex says that this Robin DiAngelo, the professor who's giving these speeches, she's a witch.
Yeah. Recorded.
I'm not going to play all of what this witch has to say, but when we come back, also, I can show you hours of just the latest racial attacks on whites being killed, being beaten by hordes, by packs of racist black people.
So packs, hordes.
There again, we have the exact.
You're describing. God damn.
We have the exact issue that is the conversation Alex refuses to have.
He
embodies the exact same thing that people like Victor Blackwell were discussing in that CNN clip. Yeah. That's why he cuts that part out, because he doesn't want to open that box. He's guilty of the exact same thing that Victor Blackwell very sensibly was discussing.
Yeah.
And it demonstrates subtle and actual racism. Hordes. Packs of black people. Racist blacks attacking whites. Yeah. So he tries to play this clip of Robin DiAngelo that he has found. And it's interesting. So we have two examples from earlier. We have the Marianne Williams clip that he allows to play because he wants it to stand as a thing that's silly and zany and nonsensical.
Right.
He has the clip of Victor Blackwell, which he has to interrupt constantly and mock so everyone knows this is stupid.
Yeah.
Now we have another clip, and it's to the point where Alex can't allow it to play.
To be white is to see oneself outside of race, to see oneself as a unique, special individual, exempt from the forces of socialization.
Outrageous lies, just insane BS.
Is he eating?
I think so.
White people.
I'll never forget a moment of standing beside a black man leading a workshop on race, and a white woman said to him, "I don't see color." He said, "Well, then how are you going to see racism? Because I am black. I do think you know that, and I have a different experience than you do. And you're not going to be able to understand that, and you're not going to be able to support the parts of that experience that are really painful and problematic if you refuse to acknowledge my reality. I don't see color is..."
Stop right there. I can't look at her.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a serpent.
Jesus.
You have Christians and good people that say, "I just want to be nice. I want to get along. I want to hire folks off of their background and what they've done, not off of color they are." Oh, that's racism. See, they're fighting what the globalists can't stand, the abolitionist Christian movement.
So Alex.
Woof.
Alex has to cut that off.
Absolutely.
Because he started to realize as the video was playing, this is making a completely different argument than I have been saying she makes.
Yep.
She's not at all saying that white people are evil. She's very clearly and cogently laying out her point about the differing experiences of people of different ethnic and racial backgrounds.
In a way that can be communicated to his listeners.
And
not
Alex
in that
can't
aggressive.
Rebut that.
No, absolutely not.
He can't rebut that.
Yeah.
Without just being like, "fuck black people."
Yeah, exactly.
There isn't really a good rebuttal that he's capable of that doesn't drift into like just outright racism.
Yeah.
And that's why he has to shut that off. He has to shut that off and shift the conversation to it being about affirmative action or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, no, there's no good rebuttal. There's only the racist rebuttal, which is not a good one.
Right. So he gathers himself, and he realizes, because he's listened to part of this clip, which I'm positive he didn't listen to before the show, based on his reaction.
Yeah.
And he realizes that what it's about is acknowledging the differing experiences that people in this country have based on race.
Yeah.
And he gathers himself, and he finds his bearings, and he's able to just be like, well, that is racist. Acknowledging that there's different experiences itself is racist.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, a woman says, I don't want to see your color. I just want to, you know, oh, no, you got to see my color. That's how we fight racism. No, that's how you create it. And then once it is about color, like Crips and Bloods, well, now you're in the gang. Now I got to be that because I'm white walking down the street. Let's go out to break with some of that. And you're just trying to go in a hotel and 20-something black people come up and beat you and break your eyes and knock your eyeball out because you're white and spit on you. That racial attack, it happens all the time. It's okay, though, see, because, see, they learn to see the race. And they taught that white devil. They taught that white devil good. Too bad they didn't kill him. Damn white devil.
I believe that they turned that music up pretty loud.
Yeah.
It's louder than it is in other to break things.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Alex is almost salivating about the black people attacking white people as if it's like, oh yeah, this is great. This is going to get my audience real juiced up. They're going to love this. It's really fucked up. It's
how
bad.
God, how do you hate so much?
It's pretty crazy.
There's so much hate that you can't even listen to somebody who you immediately know. Alex immediately knew that what she was saying
is
made
not
sense.
But it's also not what he was saying.
Exactly.
She's saying. Yeah.
Yeah. He knew it immediately, and he
I
had
think
to
it still
like,
took him like 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
That's immediate for him, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. As immediately as he could.
Yeah.
But it made so much sense to him that he was so terrified of it.
Yeah.
He was terrified of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand the idea of approaching life without, like, some desire to be challenged a little bit. Like, I listen to Alex every day, and I know he's a liar and stuff like that, but that doesn't mean everything he says is a lie. Like, I'm ready for him to make sense.
Yeah.
I know that he generally doesn't, but if he, you know... I don't listen to him in the same way he listens to people who disagree with him.
Right.
Like, I don't listen to him like, ah, fuck this noise. Yeah. Turn it off. This guy, blah, 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 blah.
No, it's almost like the highlight of your day is when he makes sense.
I wish he did more.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, if he did more, then we would be covering a very different show now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I suppose so. It is interesting to me. I don't know if I have many examples of him making sense recently, but I don't think it's impossible. I'm ready. Every time I dig into one of his stories, it's with the opportunity to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
And he always disappoints me.
Yep.
But I still persevere. So we have one last clip here, and it involves him spiraling out of control because he is getting really frustrated about these race issues. He's pretty pissed off that he's been building up this narrative about Robin DiAngelo throughout the entire episode. He's played this clip, and it didn't say what he wanted it to say, and so he's getting more racist. In the last segment of the episode, he's really he's pausing a lot. There's a lot of slowed down speech, and it's pretty fucked up stuff.
And they're hyping up and winding the minorities up, who are the majority worldwide, into a fiendish group of zombies, hell-bent on conquering the West, and everyone's going to cheer when the bioweapons are released in the future. And 2 billion, 3 billion, 4 billion people die. Race-specific bioweapons. HIV was only a test. It's killed hundreds of millions of Africans. And even though the Africans are being wound up into an army to come over here and slit my throat, you can show the video of the mother and child being thrown across into the tracks because they were white in Berlin, and the left says it's good, they're white. But you see, it's a setup. They send an army to kill you. And then they're going to kill that army.
So that is insanely fucked up.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, Alex is completely making up huge elements of the story about that train situation. It's a story about a woman and her child who were pushed in front of a train. As Alex is saying, in Berlin, the child died. He talks about it a lot on this episode.
Okay.
It comes up a bunch.
All right.
The story is real in as much as it did happen.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible tragedy, but all the extra details he's adding aren't supported by any actual reporting on the story. Also, it wasn't in Berlin. It was in Frankfurt. According to articles about the event from The Independent, The Guardian, BBC, as well as some German outlets, and even some less reputable sources, the perpetrator was in police custody but refused to speak with authorities, and no motive had been established for his attack. Whatever the reality of this ends up being, it's completely baseless for Alex to report that he was racially motivated, that the man pushed them onto the tracks because they were white. He has nothing to back that up, no evidence, no source for it, no justification for his claim, other than the fact that the media reported that the man was from Eritrea. That is all Alex needs to claim concretely, confidently, and absolutely that this was an out-of-control minority killing white people because they were white. I can't be clearer about this. It doesn't matter what the end result of the German investigation into this case is. It may very well end up being that this individual did attack this woman because he hated white people. That could be. That could end up being true, and even if it is, what Alex is doing is completely racist. He feels like this is a racially motivated attack, and that's enough for him to report it as if it is, and then extrapolate that into being proof that all whites are under attack and Africans are being wound up as an army to attack Western civilization, which we know is code for white people. Someone who wasn't invested in promoting racism and white identity would not do this. They would rely on actual facts to guide their reporting, as opposed to, well, to put it simply, white fragility.
Yeah,
I've never heard Alex ever report on any of the many instances of white people pushing non-white people onto train tracks from the past few years. There are a number of them. He could have. Alex chooses his stories and tailors his narratives with an explicit purpose in mind, and that is to make his white audience afraid of people unlike him and to make them confident that they're always in the right, even if it takes lying or just making shit up to craft that narrative. There's no other way for me to put this, really. Alex Jones's show in the present day is racist trash that is trending towards increasingly violent imagery and incitement. He has nowhere left to go but to get more extreme, and I do not think that bodes well for the future. His show sucks.
Yep.
This is a bad show.
It is weird to watch him try and create a whataboutism in real time. Like, what he's doing here is... Well, like we discussed at the very beginning, as far as giving people talking points, if somebody goes to one of his viewers or one of his listeners and says, what about all of the white supremacist terrorism that you're not acknowledging and ignoring? And they'll be like, well, what about the
woman got pushed in a bus?
Eritrean man pushed a woman into a train. So there you go. It's non-racial. We don't have to talk about all that shit.
It's
fucking bullshit.
Yeah. It's a, it's a strategy to never have to deal with the issues, just
ever.
To distract and be like, bop, boop,
yep.
Ba-doop, da, boop. I'm scatting a lot, but. This show sucks. It really does suck. And it's scary. The potential that it has, in terms of people's reaction to it.
Yeah.
Cause you have Alex saying things in that last clip, like they're winding up the Africans to be an army against the West, which again, like we know, he's talking about white people saying that Africans are being an army. They're going to come slit his throat, his personal throat.
Yeah.
I just don't think that you can talk like that without having a reasonable expectation that some of your audience is not going to deal with that subtly.
Right.
Your audience might think that, hey, I should view all people of African heritage as suspect.
Right.
It's enforcing and encouraging racism.
Yeah.
To a violent degree or a potentially violent degree.
Right.
And I don't know. I feel like as we go through this, like when we do modern day episodes, like I certainly don't know what the law is, so I don't like to comment on that too much. But I think what the importance of this is to demonstrate, like, this is what he is putting out into the world. If things go bad.
Yeah.
Just know he's doing this. He's a part of it.
Right.
That's the only thing I think, I don't know. It's the only point I can see in talking about this. And I guess I get to learn about, like, California students who almost lost their financial aid.
Yeah, that is interesting.
You know, at least
that is very interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. It's that's one of the things that I thought about with that conversation of, like, I think the comic who was saying white people are afraid that what they, you know, minorities will do to them what white people did to minorities. And it is so kind of obvious that that is what Alex is afraid of. To a certain extent, he knows he kind of has it coming, you know, he kind of thinks that he has it coming. Mm. And so his real anger comes from, we need to defeat them, otherwise we are going to get fucked.
He knows that he deserves guilt and doesn't want to feel guilt.
Exactly.
And he sublimates that into hate.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because it completely blocks off an entire path. It's it blocks off an entire path of thinking that the present and the future don't have to mirror the past.
No.
There's a positive world we can all work towards that doesn't involve tribalism.
Yeah.
And doesn't involve curing tribalism with appeals to Jesus and the free market that Jesus loves so much.
Right.
There's a possible better way forward, and Alex is just closed off to it.
And it's just so self-destructive, that line of thought, because there's no way to, it has to make you so fucking miserable all the time. And you don't even know, you can't even articulate why.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you think is making
you
miserable.
You can. You can articulate
why. But
it's
the opposite. Yeah.
Well, you can articulate why, but you can only do it privately.
Yeah.
You can't do it on the radio.
You can do it on the radio so long as you ascribe it to the people that you're against.
Yeah.
You say they're the ones who are doing all that stuff.
And you can't do it. Well, if you ascribe it to yourself, you can't expect to continue to make an income.
No, no, absolutely not.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think his show sucks. You know, that is what it is. But we'll be back.
Indeed.
On Friday.
That's the plan.
With another adventure into Alex Jones's stupid, stupid world. But until then, we have a website.
We do have a website, Dan. It is knowledgefight.com.
You bet it is. We also are on Twitter.
We are on Twitter, @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
We're also on Facebook.
We're on Facebook. And you, if you wanted to download our podcast or share it with somebody, what you should do is download it onto your phone, leave your phone unlocked and in a very public place, and have it always playing, and people will eventually find it. That sounds right.
I think that's the best strategy.
Yeah. Forests, put them out there. Absolutely.
We're big in the deer community.
Oh, yeah.
Deer love us.
Not John Deere. They do not. They don't like us at all.
Not much.
Tractor people are not our people, unfortunately.
It's
some
not true.
Tractor people. No.
That's not true.
No, you're mistaking me. I meant the tractor people.
Oh, the people who are chimeras.
Yes.
The half.
Who
half
are
tractor,
tractors. Yes.
They are not. They're not
fans of us.
No. But that's because they don't think we're far left enough. They are.
Right. Right.
They are far gone.
Yeah, it's strange. Even they hate Kerry Cassidy. It's wild.
Yeah. So until we come back for another episode, I should tell you that Robin DiAngelo, the professor who charges $12,000 for a lecture.
Good honor.
She has never killed anybody. But one guy who technically probably has is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.